Good morning. It's 9:10 a.m. Wednesday, September 17, 2014. I will call the Dallas City Council briefing meeting to order. Thank you for all for being here. We will begin with an invocation, and then Ms. Judge Hill will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. To invocate today is Brent Burmaster, Executive Director of Souls Harbor Shelter. After receiving a Bachelor of Science degree at University of Oklahoma, he began a 25-year career, but then he retired and began serving as Executive Director of Souls Harbor for those that are in transitional need in Southeast Dallas. I think this is in Mr. Atkins' district, an area that it's great to spread these services all out throughout the throughout Dallas. So, Mr. Burmaster, thank you for being here, and then Judge Hill. All rise.
Dear God, as we start this morning, we thank you for the opportunity to serve the men and women in the city of Dallas. We ask you to enlighten us with your wisdom, that we show compassion for our fellow man that is known to us. May we serve your will, not ours. May we walk in your direction, dear God. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Good.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. This afternoon, I will have the honor, but more importantly, the sober responsibility with many citizens of Dallas attending Dr. Ron Anderson's funeral at First Baptist here in Dallas. Dr. Anderson was the former CEO of Parkland Health and Hospital System. He passed away last Thursday of a short battle with cancer. He was a physician and administrator who dedicated his life and career to serving Parkland for nearly 40 years until retiring in 2011. He did his residency at Parkland in the 70s and became the hospital top executive in 1982 at just 35 years of age. He achieved the rare feat of being selected number one on Modern Physician Magazine's list of the 50 most powerful physician executives and number one on Modern Healthcare's magazine of 100 most powerful people in healthcare. Dr. Anderson was instrumental in leading the bond campaign that secured public financing for our new Parkland Hospital, $1.3 billion that's opened this slated to open later this year. As homeless czar, I worked closely with Dr. Anderson, working with homeless individuals and those in need. The needs of Dallas County and the city of Dallas became tremendous over the last decade, and we appreciate Dr. Anderson's hard work. For those of you that knew him, you know that he was a gentle, wise, and giving human being. I hail from the Christian faith, and I'm proud to say that Dr. Anderson was a true Christian. Would we all bow in a moment of silence, remembering Dr. Ron Anderson? Thank you very much. We have one special presentation this morning, and it's Councilman Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and good morning.
Good morning.
We have a special recognition today in honor of the North Texas Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And we have several folks here representing the group. We have Patricia Thompson, the Executive Director of North Texas Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, if you want to come forward. And Steve Rigby, who is a Senior Vice President and Managing Director, Global Corporate Services for CBRE, and Chairman of the North Texas Leukemia Lymphoma Society. We also have Keith Pearson. Keith is CEO of Pearson Partners and Vice Chair of LLS Board. And we have Aaron Ragsdale, Senior Vice President of Alamedia and Vice Chairman of Development of the North Texas Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. So thank you all for coming down today and working hard on behalf of the society for bringing attention and raising awareness. And also the good money that you raised to make a difference. And with that, I'll read the proclamation. Whereas the Leukemia Lymphoma Society is the world's largest voluntary nonprofit health organization dedicating to funding blood cancer research and providing education and patient services, and whereas blood cancers currently affect more than 1 million people in the United States, with an estimated 149,990 new cases diagnosed each year, and whereas the LLS Society, through voluntary contributions, is dedicated to finding cures for those diseases through research efforts and providing a comprehensive array of services to patients and families touched by blood cancers. And whereas LLS maintains offices in Dallas and Fort Worth to support patients with these diseases and their family members in the state of Texas. Now, therefore, I, Jennifer Gates, as a representative for Mayor Mike Rawlings, on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby proclaim the month of September 2014 Blood Cancer Awareness Month. Thank you.
Come forward and accept this. You want to make comment there?
Sure.
Thank you, Mayor Rawlings and Councilmember Gates and members of the City Council. I've had the opportunity to work with each of you through my job, but today I'm here simply as a citizen of Dallas, a resident of District 12. In March of 2011, my brother's youngest son, my 9-year-old nephew, went to the doctor on a Friday afternoon with a sore throat. Saturday, we knew he either had leukemia or lymphoma, and Sunday, he had leukemia type ALL and was getting his first chemotherapy treatment at Texas Children's Hospital in Houston. Up here in Dallas, my family and I felt pretty helpless, and we knew we wanted to do something to get involved in the fight against this terrible disease, so we got involved with the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. Every day I'm blown away by the work that the Leukemia Lymphoma Society is doing. Not only are they improving the quality of life for people currently in their fight against the blood cancer, but they are improving the survival rate for people who get the diagnosis. Here's an example. If my nephew would have gotten that diagnosis in 1964, he would have had a 3% survival rate. Today it's over 90%. Here's a few more just quick statistics. Every 3 minutes, someone is diagnosed with a blood cancer, and every 10 minutes, someone loses their battle. Leukemia is the number one cancer killer of children under 20. LLS has invested more than $1 billion into research, and many of the treatments they helped fund are being used in all cancers. Here's a couple of examples. The bone marrow transplant process, multi-drug chemotherapy, and the port that now gets installed in people for them to get chemotherapy through. There is no doubt that the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society is doing is amazing. So thank you guys for taking the time today to recognize September as Blood Cancer Awareness Month, and thank you for the work you do as members of the City Council. Quick note, my now 12-year-old nephew is cancer-free as of last month.
That's great.
So the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and other cancer organizations are doing is working, and we're seeing the results every day. So thank you again, and have a great day.
You want to get the council and do a quick picture?
Let's go. You want a picture, you said?
We're going to do a picture.
Okay.
Hi, Jennifer.
Yeah.
one, please. Right hand under. One more, please.
Thank you. We'll take our morning speakers.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have five registered speakers this morning: Tony Pippins-Poole, Albert Navafar, Regina Bergia, Ifeok Ekong, and Karen Knowlton. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council, will be removed from this session of the City Council. You are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please allow the next individual their turn. State your name and address for the record, as well as address your comments to Mayor Rawlings, please. Again, your first speaker, Tony Pippins-Poole, and Ms. Pippins-Poole will be followed by Albert Navafar.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Tony Pippins-Poole, and I am the Dallas County Elections Administrator, and I do reside in District 3. But my purpose here today is to invite the City of Dallas to take a part of the National Voter Registration Day. It's a day to celebrate democracy in America. It is a day that we partner with cities, school districts, churches, area hospitals, libraries, colleges, county juvenile centers, the county tax offices. We're in shopping malls and other organizations around Dallas County to promote the awareness of voter registration opportunities, which allow us to reach thousands of those that are eligible to vote but are not registered. With the new requirement of voter ID, Dallas County would also partner on this day with the Texas Department of Safety to provide a mobile unit that will provide the ability for those that do not have ID to get an elections identification certificate at our elections department. We're also going to partner with the county clerk's office for those that need a birth certificate in order to get this election identification certificate. So we're here today to invite the City of Dallas to participate in this county-wide event. In Dallas County, over 2.4 million eligible voters are eligible to register to vote, but only 70% of those are registered. And among the top 15 counties in the state of Texas, Dallas County ranks 12th in the registration. So we are trying to improve that number and provide awareness and a greater opportunity for the citizens of Dallas and Dallas County to register and become eligible to vote in the upcoming election. We know that voting is just as important to the City of Dallas, the Dallas City Council, as it is to Dallas County. If you're not registered, you cannot vote. Again, we invite the City of Dallas to partner with our efforts to provide additional outlets for eligible residents to register to vote. Thank you for your time and consideration in participating in the National Voter Registration Day, September 23rd, 2014, a day to celebrate democracy in the City of Dallas, the County of Dallas, and the State of Texas. Me and my staff, we will be available at any time to answer any questions regarding the National Voter Registration Day. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pippins-Poole, for coming down.
Thank you.
We enjoy working with you.
Your next speaker, Albert Navafar. Mr. Navafar will be followed by Regina Bergia and Ifeok Ekong.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, City Council. My name is Albert Navafar. Abraham Lincoln said, once you forfeit the confidence of your fellow citizen, you can never regain their respect and esteem. I'm here in opposition in regard to the city council and the committee regarding Uber. And here's why. Uber take 32% of the meter, discount the ride 30 to 60% below the market value, take our gratuity, which is 20%, and pass expenses to the driver. Next, you had abused your discretion for letting Uber deregulate the industry and saturate the market with drivers without any permit. That comes across to those in the business as an insult, as we who paid our dues being violated yet comply with the rules. Everyone wants to hear the truth, but in truth there is more to the story. When confronting a complex equation, the simple solution must often is the correct one. Instead of looking where else for solution, you should come to us and ask what we think about Uber. No man has a good enough memory to be a successful liar. When kings and queens ruled the world, they were content with one-third of the harvest. Now come Ubers and want twice of that. Is it going to be prosperity or poverty? You do the math. If you stay siding with those that want to dominate the city, the state, the nation, and the world, they must know that they will be dominated by the world. Those who take a great pride and pleasure riding with Uber, they are not paying their fair share without remorse and taking a great joy in misery of those who serve them and their ego. Where I come from, they say, I'd rather have a wise enemy than ignorant friends. You may want to ponder on and find out the intelligent application behind it. I have a question for those who lead us to the right decision. 3 years we stood on the sideline to waiting for your decision. Now I have a message for Uber. There will be $1 trillion for them on the table if they take their hand off of my pocket. I can have a solution for the city council. I have a solution for Uber, how to make money if they don't want to dominate the world. And I have a good solution for our industry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Regina Ambergia.
Good morning, Mayor Rawlings. I'm Regina Ambergia from the 14th District, and I'm here to talk again about fluoride. I know I'm very persistent because persistence sometimes pays off, and I've met a doctor, and his name is Dr. William Osmondson. And I asked him because he's a dentist, and he also has a master's in public health. And he also has an MK, and an MK means he was a missionary kid. And this dentist, for 25 years, believed in the fluoridation and fluoride being good for your teeth. He wrote prescriptions for it. He had no idea that what we're bringing forward was even out there. I mean, even if he did, he probably would have looked the other way like most people do, because you assume it has to be good because the CDC said in their statement years ago that it is one of the top 10 health achievements of the 20th century. But after 4 years of people kind of bringing things to his attention, he finally took the time to look into it. And now, for the last 5 years, he's been a very big advocate for exposing the dangers of fluoridation. So I bring to you guys another time that I'm bringing to you. I want to say to you that there has to be a reason that the health minister in Israel on August 26th has decided to ban fluoridation for 7 million people in her country. There has to be a reason that in Canada, where two-thirds of the communities used to fluoridate, it's now half of that. I mean, communities all over. Plus, as it is, America started out you know, in the 50s, not knowing about fluoridation. And, of course, the people at that time used the research they had and the data that they thought they were looking at. But then they didn't go forward with researching more. There was a decline. I know several people even here have mentioned that their parents had worse cavities than they do. And it's anecdotal like that. But there was a decline and decay across the world because people were learning about hygiene and better food. In Scotland, they have a Child Smiles program that's very, very effective. And it's just in the poverty areas, we still have the decay, even though the big cities, Dallas fluoridates, and all the other big cities do too. And that's where the cavities are, is in the poverty areas. It really is a nutrition, education, and hygiene issue. And the fluoridation is an issue that needs to be looked at as systemically, or whatever the word's called, in your body. When the CDC made that statement, it wasn't the whole CDC. It was the oral division of only 30 people that said that statement. They didn't look into the body and how when it's ingested. So, please, I'm going to keep coming, and several other people are, and I want you to have that little thing in your mind. Think about it. How could the health minister of Israel, 7 million people, why are these people thinking that it's not a good idea? It's not tinfoil hat. It's not crazy. Thank you very much. I hope you'll have another committee meeting on it and look into it and have a debate. Thank you very much.
Your next speaker, Ifeok Ekong, not present. Karen Knowlton, not present. Dale Smith. Mr. Smith, it will be the last speaker this morning.
Good morning. I'm the CEO of Black Contemporary Television. I've been here before.
Is your mic on, sir?
Huh?
Is your mic on? We're not hearing you.
Testing.
There we go.
Oh,
that's
there
better.
We go.
Thanks.
Okay, I'm the CEO of Black Contemporary Television. We've been here once before and sort of introduced the project that we're working on. But today I'm here to request access to the dark cable access channels to operate and run as a viable option for the community to have a voice again. We have experience in running a television channel for 2 years, so we have the infrastructure and the engineering and the education to actually operate a channel. And we right now are looking at the absence of black media in all the channels across the board, and we feel that we need to fill a gap, and possibly these three channels can help us to, accomplish that. The efforts of, cable access across the country is sort of being suppressed. It was an act in 1984 that was championed by Barry Goldwater, the conservative, who we know ran for president quite a few times, and it was designed to allow the cable companies to access the public to their voice, to creativity, to their expression, to basically the understanding of what was going inside the community. Inside of Black Dallas, you pretty much have lost that voice, period. You don't have Metro anymore, you don't have Insights anymore, you have none of these legendary programs that actually gave you insight to the black community. And now as a whole, the community has lost pretty much its voice by cable access going dark. We know that prior to Laura Miller's administration, there was $1.7 million that was allocated by the franchise subscriptions that are given to the city from Time Warner and other cable options to operate cable access. By the time it got to 2009, it had been cut down to $247,000. The fact that the money is allocated, and obviously the city has the right to do that. The law says that they have an option to basically take the funds into the general coffer, which has been done, or they can leave it where it is and allow the cable access options to grow. These options were also designed to train the community in production, in the business of TV, in the actual distribution and development of community content. So in our case, we would like to be able to sit down, negotiate, and talk about possibly taking these channels and managing them and bringing it back to life. And that's pretty much what I have to say.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Have a good day. Mr. Caraway?
Yeah, Dale, let me just ask you just a couple of things in AC so I can just bring some clarity to myself.
Okay.
Did you say the dark three channels?
Yeah, the channels are totally dark.
All right. Now, which channels are you speaking of? Our channels here?
No. These are government access channels. These are the channels that were run by, I think, Dallas Eye Media.
Okay. Which channels are you talking about? The channels that we have?
Channels that you have. Right. Yeah, channels the city has under control.
All right. So have you made a proposal to our city manager?
That's what I have right here.
That's what you have?
What you have in your hand, and I'm going to distribute to everybody on the board.
Okay, so you'll make that proposal. Our city manager will review it. And then let me just say this one thing.
Okay.
When we do it, you start out saying dark, then we said black.
Mm-hmm.
If, and in your proposal, let me just suggest that it needs to be for everybody.
Right.
And not just black.
Absolutely.
I just want to make sure when you turn your proposal in that we know that it's going to reflect, your proposal should reflect the ethnicity of the city on that channel.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. But good. And turn it in to AC.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Thank you so much. AC, on the channel that we that Mr. Smith is talking about, are we using that channel now?
At the moment, we are underutilizing those capabilities, and Sana Syed is in the process of putting together an action plan, which we would be looking at how they may be more utilized than they have been in the past. Proposals like the gentleman was talking about are something that we would be wanting to look at, but at the moment, they're not being utilized like they should.
Yeah, because he had contemporary black TV, and of course, there's nothing wrong with that, because when you look at local channel, you got the Asian channels, you got the Latino channel, a ton of Latino channels on local TV. You have the Vietnamese channel, you have all the other channels. If you were to look at something like that, would you look at a variety of cultures that to utilize the airways? Would you guys look at it like that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's our last speaker this morning.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we've got some items this morning to vote on. Just FYI, guys, we're going to skip appointments till after executive session, so we'll be skipping that and come back to that after executive session.
Agenda item number one is approval of minutes of the September 3rd, 2014 City Council meeting.
We got a motion and a second. Any edits? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda items number 3, 4, and 5 have been pulled from consideration as they're not prepared to be approved. We move now to agenda item number 6. It's a final reading and adoption of appropriation ordinances for the proposed fiscal year 2014-15 City of Dallas operating grants, trusts, and capital budget. The item will require a record vote.
I'm entertaining a motion to approve.
So moved.
We have a second. Motion is second. Any discussion?
All right, discussion.
Mr. Kleinman?
Just my component of discussion is the order of business. It seems odd to me that we would be first adopting the budget and then adopting the tax rate. It seems more like it would be a policy decision to adopt a tax rate, which would set the amount of money we're going to have, and then adopt the budget. Maybe the city manager can explain that to us.
We agree with the, I'm not sure if it's like with that sentiment, but it is set out by charter.
Thank you. Ms. Grace.
I was going to say the same thing, because first we approve the budget, and then afterwards we approve various fees and we approve salary schedules and things like that. And so,
why did we change the charter when we did all this?
There also may be some state law involved as well.
State.
And I also wanted to mention again, as I did last week, that part of the approval of this budget is to raise water rates. And those fees, 22 million of them, go to economic development by way of pilot taxes. And so I just wanted to ask What other enterprise funds pay pilot tax? Pay pilot payment in lieu of taxes.
In terms of the utilities that we own, I believe that's the only utility that does pay pilot. Now there's in the form of transfers for services that are made between the airport fund, as an example, there's transfers that we have on services that are provided by the general fund for, you know, if it's security by the police department. Those kinds of
security at Love Field.
At Love Field.
So basically the aviation funds are getting sent back to the airport.
Well, yes, those are services directly.
Right.
I would say with the first part of what I said, that's the only utility that pays, that we have, that pays a pilot.
And did I understand that that was approved in a charter change years ago?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
And when was that?
I believe it was 93.
1993?
94, yeah.
Yes.
And when was the council action that decided that all of those pilot funds would go toward economic development?
We looked back, and I believe it was about 2002 that the actual implementation of the pilot was put in place, and shortly thereafter there was provisions in terms of wording included in the authorization for that transfer to be made, that it would be used for economic development.
Wording in the authorization of the budget?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So it was always just done as part of the budget like we're doing today?
That's correct.
But was there ever like a council discussion saying that that is, I mean, a specific council discussion related specifically to that item saying that's where we're going to spend the money?
I would say indirectly, in that at various times we've had discussions about the use of public-private money and how it funds the public-private account, if you will, that is used for a variety of different projects. There's actually guidelines that are brought before the Economic Development Committee that are used to guide decisions with regards to the use of not only that money but other funds as well, other incentives. And during that discourse at a variety of times, I think it has been brought up that the funding mechanism for that is in part by pilot.
Could I see, you say in part, could I see an accounting of where the public-private partnership monies come from?
Sure.
And these water funds would be part of it.
Yes.
It just doesn't seem to me really transparent government to say that we're raising water rates and that a number of those monies go into paying for economic development. I don't know that that's really transparent to the public.
Okay.
So I'd like to see an accounting of where the public-private partnership monies come from.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So we have a
Ms. Gates.
I'm sorry, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a follow-up to Ms. Grayson's question. So if it's part of the charter, could it, Mr. Gonzalez, could we choose, though, not to charge the pilot?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, so
it's not required.
The charter allows us to do it, and it only allows us to put the money towards economic
No.
No.
What the charter provision is to allow a pilot to be charged.
Okay.
It's silent on its use.
Okay, and then we could choose not to do it and leave
yes.
the money there. Okay, I just want to clarify that. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. AC, am I correct in thinking that beyond the pilot funds, there are further excess funds generated from DWU that wind up in the general fund, right?
Those, I need maybe some help on that. There are charges that we have for services, much like what I was explaining in terms of aviation, that has funds, but...
Mr. Gales, you want me to...
Go ahead, please.
Kingston, where did he go?
He's right.
There he is. Mr. Kingston, you asked about surplus revenues from DWU going in the general fund. Is that right? No. We pay payment in lieu of taxes. We pay for general fund cost reimbursement. We pay street rental. But any surplus revenues that are in the utility or net revenues would go back to the utility for providing capital services or for reserve funding.
Okay. Well, I'm going to need another briefing on that because that's directly contrary to what was explained to me before the adoption of the budget. But regardless, if we're paying money into economic development out of DWU and we raise the fees, that is a disguised tax hike. And worse than that, it's a regressive disguised tax hike. people are very inelastic users of water. They pretty much have to take showers, and so that hits the people with the lowest incomes the hardest. I think during this next year we need to look at maybe rolling sanitation into the enterprise fund and see if we can run the whole system on its own fees. If we're gonna work that way, then we need to figure out what we're gonna do there. But the way we're doing it now essentially has allowed us to increase taxes this year in the form of a fee. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Okay, Mr. Allen.
This is always we have the pilot discussion, at least I know for the last 3-4 years, and it's always it's a last minute discussion. Some intensity involved in it, so but I do want everyone to understand that this is something that's been, because you haven't heard a lot of people bring it up and talk about it, but we've talked about it quite a bit. But it's worthy to continue to talk about it and bring it up and for people to understand it.
Thank you. Mrs. Grayson.
Could I just say that in terms of a last-minute discussion, that's why I would like us to have a briefing or have some more information on it sooner rather than later, and maybe we could do it as we're formulating the budget earlier next time. Thank you.
Ms. Gonzalez?
We can do that.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. Hearing no other comments, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Mr. Mayor, we need a record vote on it, please.
State law
requires we do a record vote.
Anybody voting against? Okay.
The record shows all 15 council members present and all are voting in favor.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 7 is an ordinance setting the tax rate at 0.7970 cents per 100 valuation, which includes 0.5646 cents for general fund and 0.2324 cents for debt service and levying ad valorem taxes for the City of Dallas, Texas for fiscal year 2014-15. This item also requires a record vote.
Mr. Atkins?
Yes, I move that the property tax rate be increased by the adoption of the tax rate of 0.7970, which is effective a 4.85% increase in tax rate.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Discussion?
Discussion. Yeah. Did he just propose a tax rate increase? Those
Mr.
are the words.
Atkins. I moved that the property tax rate be increased by the adoption of the tax rate of 0.7970, which is effect a 4.85% increase in the tax rate.
Let me just clarify. Was this the tax rate that, Mr. Gonzalez, you put in the budget?
Right, yes.
Right here. Go ahead.
Gene, if you'd come and explain.
Okay.
So the state tax code requires that language that Mr. just read into the record. It says that although the tax rate is the same, there is an effective tax rate increase.
Right, so we're increasing the tax rate above the effective tax rate, which would set our taxes at the same taxes we had last year.
Precisely.
Right.
I think that's what you've said, right?
Yeah, every time, and I'm prepared to discuss when you're calling for discussion.
Thank you. Mr. Kingston.
So Mr. Atkins' motion is to retain 797.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Well, just to take a page from Mr. Atkins' advice to me on several occasions, perhaps you could distribute that motion ahead of time.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right. Mr. Alonzo? Oh, I thought you raised your hand.
Okay.
Mr. King, Kleinman.
Thank you. I'll be voting against this motion because I don't feel we should be increasing our taxes to our citizens here in Dallas. While I think the city manager did a very good job and worked very well with council members to prepare us with a good budget, and that's why I voted for the budget, I'm just not comfortable raising taxes across the board. This tax rate and tax increase really breaks down to about $2,000 per citizen in Dallas. So us voting on this means we're asking every man, woman, and child that's a citizen of the city of Dallas basically to write a $2,000 check for us to operate the city, and I just think that's way too much. So I will be voting against this tax rate proposal, which in essence is a tax increase on citizens. Thank you.
Thank you. While I respect your desire to keep our taxes down, I just want to, for the record, the citizens of Dallas are not writing a $2,000 check. This is property tax and sales tax. So I want to just make sure if anybody hears that, and that it does come through that.
It does come through the property taxes, correct. Okay. And everybody who owns property or pays rent on property is indirectly paying this bill.
Thank you. I just want Mr. Allen.
I would like just, that's a good point. I'd like just to hear more clarification on how you come up with the $2,000 per citizen, per the 1.3 million citizens,
yeah,
how you break it down.
$2.8 billion divided by 1.3 million.
So you just take the money and divided it by whether it's a property valued at $100 or one that's valued at $100,000, and then assuming they're going to have to pay $2,000.
Well, it's average. It's average.
So
it's the mean, not the median.
So if it's $100 property versus $1 million, it's still $2,000 for the million dollar property.
It's the mean, not the median. If you'd like the median, I could.
So it's not
that.
Really every citizen is going to pay $2,000.
That is correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure
several
understood
several about. Citizens, including probably most people around this table, will be paying a lot more than that.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Gonzalez.
And I think the points you made about that our tax rate is something that we've had an opportunity by increased value that there's increases taxes that are being collected. Just a couple of facts. $2.8 billion includes much more than just the tax rate that's involved here. It's all the water rates, the sanitation rates, it's sales tax, et cetera, that math would be including. Our overall rate comes out with our property tax rate generates a portion of the general fund, a portion of about $1.1 billion. And so the math would be a little bit different in terms of people paying this particular tax on a per capita basis. However, as to the overall issue, I think that is being raised as far as there's new income that is coming to the city by way of those increased values and the way the state law is set, that it's against the effective tax rate. This is, as is stated, an increase of that revenue.
Thank you. Any other? Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, I just wanted to state that this is played out all over America every year. We really do get the math. I think the average citizen out there understands that sometimes values go down, sometimes values go up. During the recession, guess what? Revenue went down because our tax base valuation went down, so our effective rate of taxes went down. Now it's gone the other way, which you very adroitly said, and it's not just property tax. And coupled with that is also the new properties that we've put online, the new constructed buildings. Now they're on the tax rolls. Some of the tax abatements that have been there before have been paid up. Now they're back on the rolls. There's a lot of things at work there, and I don't really agree on stating that on a $2.8 billion because that capital budget, in effect, remains the same. If I'm not mistaken, it actually went down because the actual capital requirements to pay that bond debt is now less than it was before. So just for clarity, again, every city, every municipality, every school district, county, everybody does this every year. Sometimes, revenue goes up because valuations go up. Sometimes it goes down. And as far as the state law says, you have to tell them that you're effectively paying a higher rate because your revenue is greater. So that's all that's really taking place. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a technical question. If we were to vote against this tax, what would happen to the budget? so that we disapprove this budget. So.
I just want to confirm and correct me if I'm wrong, Gene, but it's, the difference between the effective tax rate and the existing tax rate, and which is being the proposed tax rate, which is
$33 million.
Yeah. Would be $33 million that we would not have towards.
So even though we approved the budget just 10 seconds or 2 minutes ago, yeah, we would then initially have to make an amendment to cut the budget by $33 million would be our
right.
next. Would
the flow of logic here is strains everybody's sense of it. But anyway, yes, we would have to then go. If you wanted a technical answer for that specific question, you would have to go back and find $33 million of revenue.
Okay. Well, I think while I agree that it is, we need to be transparent to our taxpayers that they are in essence paying, even though the rate is remaining the same, they are paying more, so it is an increase in tax. We've worked hard to come up with this budget, and to go backwards at this point and try to cut $33 million out would be I don't think it would be fair to those that we've been telling in the last 30 days and at our town hall meetings that we're going to be getting funding that we're now going to cut it back. So I will be voting for the this rate. Thank you.
Thank you. No other discussions. We need a record vote, so I'll do a show of hands. Okay, all in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. Okay, all opposed? One opposed. Thank you.
Thank you. The record reflects that all the 14 council members voted in favor, and Councilmember Kleinman voted against. Agenda item number 8 is ratify the increase in property tax revenues resulting from increased property valuations with the same property tax rate as in the prior fiscal year reflected in the fiscal year 2014-15 budget. This item also requires a record vote.
Thank you. Do we have a motion to approve?
Second.
The motion is second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any? Excuse me. All this is record vote, right?
Right.
All these items?
Yes. This is
so
the final
all
one.
Those in favor, show of hands. Okay. Any opposed? Okay.
The record reflects 14 council members voting in favor, with Councilmember Kleinman voting against. The motion carries. Agenda item number 9 is ordinance amending chapters 2, 5A, 6A, 9A, 14, 18, 41A, and 52 of the Dallas City Code to number 1, adjust application fees for the abandonment of public right-of-way, number 2, adjust registration fees for used car lots, number 3, adjust registration fees for facilities which emit or have the potential to emit air contaminants, number 4, adjust the amusement center license fee. Number 5, adjust the annual fee for billiard tables. Number 6, adjust annual license fees for dance halls. Number 7, adjust charges for residential sanitation collection services. Number 8, specify when a disposal service charge under a disposal service contract may be increased. Number 9, adjust the annual license fee for sexually oriented businesses. And number 10, adjust barricade fees.
Thank you. Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Do we have a second? A motion and second. Discussion, Ms. Grayson.
On some of these fees, like for instance, for the number of billiard tables in a place or the number of spaces on a used car lot, what are these fees for? We go inspect used car lots? We go and inspect billiard tables?
Yes. Yes.
What do we inspect spaces in a used car lot for?
I'm sorry?
What do we do when we inspect spaces in a used car lot?
Air quality.
The car is parked in a parking space in a used car lot.
Yes, and they're going to sell the cars and have them drive off the lot.
So we're making a guy who owns a used car lot pay a fee for the number of spaces he has that hold cars that may drive off his lot? And
it's a part of the state program.
So it's a state-imposed fee that we have to impose locally?
No, it is a state program that we participate in.
in which the state is paying two-thirds and we pay one-third. So we end up setting the fee based upon our cost of doing the service. And we are inspecting the lots to make sure that they are in compliance with state air quality laws.
Well, explain inspecting the lots for what? The cars and parking spots? Or what are we inspecting?
The reference to a number of parking spots at the lot reflects then the kind of quantity of cars coming through there, so it gives an indicator of the amount of work. So it's a placeholder for charging more for bigger outfits than for smaller outfits. So it's a placeholder for size.
Do new car dealerships pay a fee for
this cars? Is only for used cars.
Used cars because they're dirtier and they pollute the air more.
Right.
In theory.
Mm-hmm.
What do we charge a fee for to inspect billiard tables?
I'm the wrong person for that.
Under the vice unit, and we inspect billiard halls to make sure they're in compliance with the city ordinances and state ordinances, just like we do dance halls and all the other establishments that we permit.
Okay, so just tell me a little bit about what a billiard hall does that needs to be policed.
It depends on the location. Not all locations with billiard tables have to pay this fee. It's only the coin-operated ones. And so there are very few in the city of Dallas that fall under that ordinance. Most of your billiard halls are going to be at places like Dave and Buster's and those other amusement-type centers. So we just make sure that the tables are in accordance with regulations, and that's
so coin-operated tables have a chance of having some criminal element attached to them?
It's just the overall establishment that we're inspecting.
Okay.
There are very, very few of those in the city of Dallas.
Okay. I mean, I just look at some of these fees, and they seem a reach. So, thank you.
Let me follow up, and Mr. Gonzalez, we've got fees all over the city. How often do we assess the appropriateness of charging those fees? You know, do we kind of have a fee review and say that one should be sunsetted? We should, you know, how do we approach this issue?
The current approach is that the fees themselves, the amounts being charged, the allocation for those charges are based on, for the very, very most part, a once every 4 year type look. But that's as to how much effort we as a city organization are making to implement those various regulations. It's not really questioning the fee itself. Now, what we had talked about and what I had proposed is that over this next 5 years, we start taking a deeper dive into various departments, 20% of them each year, in which the look will be different. It will be as a sunset look that will question things like this. You know, why do we do this? What's the basis for a variety of different programs or fees or whatever? And as it happens, I believe police department is one of those departments that we would be taking a deeper look at on this first year. All these fees would come up. There would be a discussion about the, you know, how they got into place, whether or not it still makes sense, whether or not we need to be allocating resources for it. So that'll be a different look than we've had in the past.
Now, I look forward to that because this in-depth look at 20% of all our departments, I think is really an excellent way to kind of get at some of whether, not whether the fee is reasonable, but whether we even need the fee anymore. And I know we always look at cost recovery on our fees, but you know, I want to go back and see, do we even need to be charging that fee to begin with? So I think that in-depth look that you proposed is a really good idea. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Kingston. And then Mr. Gowan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In addition to that, Mr. Gonzalez, I think we ought to look at what we're spending to assess right size and collect the fees. I'm a little disturbed that vice cops are being used for administrative inspections.
And without getting into it, you know, just that observation is exactly the kind of thing that we ought to be looking at to see whether or not there's more effective ways of actually achieving similar results.
Mr. Callahan.
This is really the first I've heard about some of this. I knew the billiard tables received an annual inspection. Question, do we receive any funds from the state on the registration sticker that has to go on those, or do we have a companion sticker for the city of Dallas?
You need a lifeline on that.
I don't have the answer to that. I don't believe we do, but I cannot speak to that for certain. And, Ms. Grayson, just to follow up on your question, amusement centers, billiard hall licenses are all regulated by city code, and there are regulations as to who can have those permits. And so part of that fee is for the administrative process to make sure we check the backgrounds of those individuals and things of that nature.
And, Mayor, I want to be on record. I'm going to oppose this. And I think it's very unfair that the used car dealerships are singled out. That's a big part of the business community in my community, members of both chambers of commerce. They're the ones that put a lot of charitable dollars into our coffers. I just think it's unfair to single them out over and above the new car dealerships. These guys pay an excessive amount of property tax. They have elevated property tax because they have concreted driveways, fences around their buildings, electricity, lighting, so forth, electronic gates. And because of the property tax valuation they pay a high amount of sales tax to sell the cars. They have an annual state licensing fee that they pay. Anytime they get a change in zoning, they pay extraordinary fees. I'm just feed out on that, and I just think it's wrong, and I think there's some other things in here that I'd like to take a closer look at, too. I'm going to move that we amend this ordinance to exclude the used car dealers for the time being.
Do you have a second? Is there a second? Okay. So let's just be clear what we've just done. We have a motion and a second on item number 9 that excludes... There's not a number here. Oh, yeah, 2. Excludes item 2 on that, correct?
Yes, sir.
Callahan?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Allen.
I just want to ask again if Jill would help clarify this for me, because I thought I heard something along the lines on the used cars that this was more from the state.
Right. Remember, we're non-attainment for ozone here, and so part of the state plan is that we need to make sure that cars being sold will not unduly pollute the atmosphere. And so what we're inspecting is the gas tank portion of the car to make sure that it's all tight and that when cars go to be refueled that it's, you know, all going to go into the tank and not out into the atmosphere. Our program is for the used car lots. New car lots have to do the same thing, but it's handled differently through the state.
And so if we were to amend this and say we're not going to do it, what would the state say?
I don't know. We'd be kind of in violation of our...
All right, we got too many folks talking. So,
I think we'd still have to do it, or the state could say, you know, that they didn't want us being there.
Hold on here for a second. I want to clarify the motion because I think it's important.
Yeah.
Are you saying that we're not going to adjust the fees or get rid of the fee?
I move that we get rid of that portion of that order.
I think that's not in order at this point, okay? Because this is a budget. I think you have to bring that up at a later time.
What could be in order? Is there an alternative potential motion I could make, City Attorney?
Take a microphone. Okay. We got it.
This is the piece that they are right now. So the motion on the base motion provides for an increase at each of the levels of $35. So from 165 to 200, from 215 to 245, and from 260 to 295.
Right.
The motion to exclude the adjustment of that fee, in which case the city would not have the full cost recovery, would continue to be doing the inspections, but would be receiving incrementally less to cover the cost of doing that inspection.
And then I would suggest you bring it to quality of life and take that matter up and move it up the chain.
Yeah, I will amend my or withdraw my First Amendment and offer a new amendment so that we will not increase the adjust or not adjust the amount to increase that recovery and then do as you suggest.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Along that lines, and I appreciate the thought process or the passion. What we're seeing here, and I don't know if we have said this well enough, this, every 4 years we do a review, we pay for an outside individual or company to come in, look at these fees, and this is to make sure that what we're required to do as a city, that we're being reimbursed for that our citizens do not have to suffer, that our libraries, that our parks, that our potholes, rest of these things, that we're not subsidizing money, that we go in and we look in and say, this is true cost recovery. So what I'm hearing on this is handpicking what we think maybe we don't want to do this. And so I encourage the conversation. Again, this went through budget, finance, and audit just this last Monday, as these amendments always do. They're there to be looked at by these professionals. But I would, instead of just saying we're going to hold something and not go with the professional, I would probably want to have much more detailed thought process go into that so we actually understand what we're doing versus just kind of doing it right here at the horseshoe and within a two-second period of time thought process. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Mr. Kingston. Okay, Mr. Callahan has spoken. We'll come back to round two with you, Mr. Carraway. Mr. Kingston said no. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just going to point out, similar to Mr. Allen, we did look at this in budget and finance and audit, and these rates or these fees, they slid related to the analysis that was done to be to make sure that we had full cost recovery, and I'm not comfortable with us subsidizing our inspections to the used car salesman and not to other areas. We're going to have to continue to do the inspections. Now, if we need to look forward and be able to not have to do the inspections, that's fine. But if we're required to do them, I think we need to charge to have the cost recovery. That would be taking the money from elsewhere in our budget, and I just for one particular entity, and I don't think that's fair to our taxpayers. So I would not be supportive of changing that fee. Again, these fees were determined by an analysis that was done from an outside source. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let me ask a question. Somebody had talked about the increase. 1 through 10, how much did these increase? Were there different chart increase for each one of them?
In the, thank you. It varied. Some were increased, some were decreased.
Okay.
It just depends on the actual, the specific ones.
So the reason we did this, the money that we make off the items that was increased, it goes back into the general fund.
Well, first of all, I want to make sure, and I'm just trying to be very clear so that we have the right idea about this. We're not making anything off of this. The fees that are set are just to pay for what the service is required in order to affect this particular fee. Now, what is charged, as Mr. Allen was saying, that revenue goes into the general fund.
So What revenue? Is this a part of the fee that
yes,
goes
yes,
into
ma'am.
The...
That, this fee revenue would go into the general fund.
Okay. And that increase, who set the increase? This outside consultant?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then a portion of the fee would go into our general fund. And we use that money...
All of it goes into the general fund.
But also, all of it goes
yes,
into...
Yes, all of it goes into the general fund to offset the cost that it cost us to provide that service.
Okay, so it's just an offset. And AC, what line item is this in the general fund? Under miscellaneous?
The fee itself... Need some help. Where's the line item? It's going to be just in the revenue under fines or fees.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's everybody. Don't worry about it. Okay, then. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I just want to clarify following up on Ms. Davis's question. So this amendment would cut the budget by how much in total?
The amendment would cut the budget by about $14,000.
$14,000. Thank you very much.
Keep the fees the same. It's only his amendment. Only was cutting the increase.
That's what he. That's what his answer was.
Okay.
Ms. Grayson.
You know, I know that what we're doing is adjusting the fees to get full cost recovery for the service. But I did want to ask Jill one more question. Jill, don't all vehicles get tested for tailpipe emissions at some point? Isn't this like a double inspection? I mean, when you buy the car, at some point, you take it in, you get a vehicle inspection.
Right, and then a year later, it would be inspected again. But
I mean, we're directed to do this by the state, right?
Yes.
Well, okay. I mean, I think I'm going to have to withdraw my second, Mr. Callahan, just because I think that what we ought to do is have some more discussion. For those of us that aren't on budget and finance, this is kind of the first time we've seen this. And so maybe at some point in the budget process, Mr. Gonzalez, you just kind of run this by us in a separate memo or something for those of us who aren't on budget and finance and don't get the opportunity to talk about this.
Yes, ma'am. I think, once again, when we have a deeper dive in these departments, these sorts of things will come up and we'll have more conversation.
Deeper dive. Okay, good.
Okay, do we have a second to replace Mr. Callahan?
Well... Yes, we need a second to continue. I just have one comment.
Do we have a second? Failing the second, the motion fails, and we will go back to the motion in the second as is standing. Mr. Kleinman was going to speak next.
Thank you, Mayor. So when I look at this item, I kind of look at the big numbers, and the big number in here is the increase in the sanitation fee to 1.6, increase of 1.6 million. I'm definitely very concerned about that, and I'd like an explanation between that and what's actually in the text of the document, because the amendment seems to refer to contractor fees and disposal service charge on a contractor, but the item indicates it's a residential sanitation fee, so I'm not clear on are we dealing with contractors that are bringing stuff to our landfill, or is this an increase in fees for our residents?
Mr. Kleinman.
So further down in the section, item number, it says number four when you actually read the text of the... Okay.
So there's an increase in the residential fee of 67 cents. Also some language there that talks about applying rate increases at the landfill. And so that's the portion that's talking about contracts at the landfill. And so there's some language amending that. It was something that we took to budget, finance, and audit. So there's no increase there, but there is an increase in residential rates.
Okay. So then why do we say, when it talks about payment of the disposal service charge under the disposal service contract, That's what I'm just not clear on. Are we, because it talks in here about being able to increase the fee based on the consumer price index?
Yes, sir. So we have long-term disposal service contracts at the landfill. And so customers that will come in and guarantee a certain tonnage annually, and they guarantee for a certain time period, we have contracts with them. And so there was some language dealing with the CPI increase for those contracts.
And so we modified that language, or we're proposing to modify that language to say that we'll only increase the rates on the contracts if we're increasing the general gate rate.
So while these are in the same item, these two sections are not related?
They're in the same chapter 18 of the ordinance.
So in the summary where it talks about the $1.6 million that revenue we're going to get, is that related to this CPI change?
About $1.7 million is related to the 67 cents for the residential.
For the residential, and then this other section is just language also allowing us to increase our fees at the landfill, but not related to our residential component, which is in the upper part of the...
It's not related to the residential fee, yes, sir.
Okay. And, of course, concerned about increasing our residential sanitation fees. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And listening to Mr. Callahan, I understand your concern. That's number one. I know that it did not have a second. But two, Ms. Grayson...
It's not too late.
No, it's not too late. But what, Mayor, what I'm going to suggest we do, and it has gone respectfully to Budget and Finance, that we give an opportunity to talk about this. We're going to move this thing forward. But I think it deserves conversation, and we should bring it to the Quality of Life Committee to talk about it, especially since it talked about pollution. I want to make sure environmentally that we are intact with what is also going on. But let's not affect today's budget and the vote. But, Joey, put this on Quality of Life, and then, Mr. Callahan, we will deal with it at that point, and maybe your concerns can be addressed as we move forward.
Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, I do have a follow-up comment. Ms. Grayson just kind of landed on exactly where I was going with my notes. You know, this really is onerous and bureaucratic, you know, to have that. That's a duplicative fee. And, again, we have this inspection every year. We're paying $39. Every time they get a car that runs through there, they pay $39, and they have all that done. And then we're going back to see if they did do it. Well, the state already is checking air quality by doing the test on that as well as just a general inspection of the quality of the vehicle. So I don't understand why we have to have two different processes when one is enough with a state sticker on the windshield. That just told us right there, that state sticker on the windshield, that was done. And I don't see our city going out and doing the inspecting that's going to be any better. Now, as far as recovery fees, I get that. But obviously my motion is a protestation of that. And what we want to do is come back and eventually, even if it takes a state fix, get rid of that. Thank you.
Thank you. No more discussion. A show of hands. Was somebody... Mr. Allen, I was just going to say,
Councilman Callahan really brings up a good point too, which a lot of this, as we look into it, we realize whether it's state, national, and then those become part of whether or not we want to pursue that with the state. And that's that conversation about how we ultimately change something. So that's a good conversation ultimately to have about how do we make change. And where does change really come from? And how do you control that change? How do you control the conversation? And it's through knowledge. So, thank you.
Thank you. So, what? Judge Hill, did you want to speak? Okay, someone said you may speak. Okay, all in favor, show of hands. Okay. All right, any opposed? We got one opposed. Okay, item number 10.
Agenda item number 10 is an ordinance amending chapters 2, 39A, 43, and 51A of the Dallas City Code. Number 1, to correct obsolete references to the Director of Planning, the Department of Planning, and the Urban Rehabilitation Standards Board. Number 2, to create the Department of Planning and Neighborhood Vitality. Number 3, to transfer certain planning functions to the Department of Planning and Neighborhood Vitality. And number 4, to make certain semantic, grammatical, and structural changes, providing a penalty not to exceed $2,000, providing a saving clause, providing a severability clause, and providing an effective date.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
We have a second. Any discussion? Mr. Kingston.
Mr. Gonzalez, I know this is all new stuff. At some point, can you just give me a little more information on the structure of that department, responsibilities and duties, just so I understand it better? Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
All in favor, show of hands. Okay. Any opposed? No opposed. Motion carries.
Item number 11 is authorized, number one, position changes, number two, approval of civilian salary schedules for fiscal year 2014-15, number three, authorize a 4% increase for police and fire uniformed executives effective April 2015, number four, police and fire uniform salary schedules in accord with the 2013 meet and confer agreement, and number five, the elimination of the following two holidays, Patriots Day, September 11th, and Cesar Chavez Day, March 31st, will be eliminated and cannot be reinstated.
So moved. We have a second. We had a motion and a second. Discussion, Ms. Davis and Ms. Grayson.
Can you read the holidays over again?
Yes, it's Patriots Day, which is September 11th, and Cesar Chavez Day, March 31st.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson.
And those holidays would be eliminated for everybody. I mean, civilian and uniform.
I didn't quite hear.
I said, and those holidays would be eliminated for everybody, civilian and uniform.
The civilians never had those days.
Oh, the civilians don't have those days, so it only applies to the uniform.
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All in favor, show of hands. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item number 12.
Agenda item number 12. Mr. Mayor, you want me to go ahead and read that and then the briefing?
Excuse me?
Did you want me to read number 12 and then go into the briefing, or did you want to do the briefing first before?
No, I think we'll do the item
related?
12 first, right? Yeah, 12 first. It's separate.
Okay. Agenda item number 12 is an ordinance amending Chapter 49 of the Dallas City Code to establish and adjust certain rates, charges, and fees relating to water and wastewater services for Dallas and customer cities effective October 1, 2014.
So moved.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, show of hands. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. We will go into briefing item A. Just for the council, what I want to do is do briefing item A. We're going to break into executive session. We will pick up the appointments, vote it when we come back, and close with the city manager. So that's the agenda for the rest of the day. Jody, how you doing?
I'm great. Wonderful day today.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Well, I told you, I think you tell Rosa that it needs to go into
Ms. Mayor,
full council.
Go ahead and start.
Mr. Manager, you want me to dive into this?
Go ahead.
Okay. Before you today is a substantial briefing, frankly, on our report of our long range water supply plan. So the purpose today on page 2 of your briefing kind of outlines that and give you a little bit of update where our supply is in this current drought. And then the long-range plan report that this briefing really represents. So I'm going to take you to slide 5 to give you a little kind of 50,000-foot level of this current drought environment. And you can see on this chart the light tan color over Texas is supposed to forecast an improvement in the drought. The El Nino pattern in theory, based on forecasters' plans, is that it will improve the drought conditions in Texas. And we hope that that's also true. I found it interesting this morning that Phoenix is sandbagging parts of their town because of the hurricanes. It's an interesting weather climate for us all. So we expect that will improve, and we hope to see that. But currently, it's a little on the tough side. On the next slide, 6, you'll see a chart that tries to give you an idea how we look at the rainfall pattern and how it affects our supply. The normal rainfall is what you kind of hear them report on the news and the weather And it this is a cumulative total to show you how it impacts the supply over time. So currently our actual rainfall is below normal, but above about 20% or so of the drought of record rainfall, which is how we kind of measure the supply. On the next slide, you'll see a little bit about where our supplies are. We're roughly about 30% depleted. And frankly, we've kind of been holding that pattern for about a year. Had some nice intermittent rains sort of at the right time, but mostly has knocked down our demand and not really increased our supply too much. The next chart shows really those lakes that we rely on associated with our supply. You could see a couple of them are down substantially. This is as of September 8th. We have a couple of lakes that are down about 10 feet. Lake Fork is down about 5. Overall, our system is about 70% full, which is a good thing. The next chart, I affectionately call it my blue chart for obvious reasons, but again, we're about 70% full, but we're on a slide towards stage one and potentially stage two later next year if rainfall doesn't help us out. But it's something we monitor. So our system is built on this drought of record, so quite frankly, it's performing quite well. I'll mention again, when we talk about this chart, you'll look back in December of 2011, which was kind of the end of that worst one-year drought that you hear folks talk about, and that rate of decline that year was substantial. And so the nice thing is our system is performing like we've forecasted. The challenge we all face in the water supply business is what's to come. So we hope that long-range supply plan is going to help us with, quote-unquote, what's to come. Slide 11 gives you a bit of a background on where our long-range planning has come back in 1959, which happened to be a year after I was born. The city embarked on long-range water supply planning in a very serious way. You hear a lot of talk about the drought of record, but it's quite frankly the stimulus or the motivation of the leaders at that time to acquire water supplies for both Dallas and the region around Dallas because of having, no pun intended, kind of people in the tent with us to go acquire additional water. And so that's really kind of the foundation of the regional water system that we have today. You've heard about Senate Bill 1 back in 1997, which came about from another drought in Texas, which is, frankly has resulted in this whole regional water planning piece. Our role in that regional water planning piece is where we take our recommendations, council adopted recommendations, and submit them as part of that plan. And just the truth in lending, I'm the vice chair of the Regency Planning Group, which is basically made up of the DFW Metroplex counties and a few counties to the south. So back in 2005, we had a long-range plan on slide 13 that we had used as part of our foundation for the regional planning process then. So we've taken that plan, we've looked at the changes that have occurred since then, and incorporated that work as part of this current plan that we're proposing today. Additional studies on slide 14 indicate a couple of partnerships that we were looking at with the Sulphur River Basin study. That's a partnership with four other regional providers as well as the Sulphur River Basin Authority to look at potential supplies from the Sulphur River Basin. A lot of people might have heard of Lake Jim Chapman, Wright Patman, and then the Marvin Nichols Reservoir, which has been a bone of contention for a number of years with the Sulphur River Basin. Additionally, the Upper Neches project, some of you might recall, we had proposed Lake Fastrel in our last plan. Lake Fastrel was, in essence, eliminated from consideration because of the establishment of a wildlife refuge. So we wanted to look at, was there still a way to get water from the Neches, off-channel reservoir, some other kind of pumping option to help support our supply. So those studies are a part or a feeder into our overall plan. Slide 16 gives you a view of our system today as far as what's connected and what we have to use. Again, the Western supplies, as we like to call them, Louisville, Grapevine, and Ray Roberts, and then our Eastern supplies, Lake Ray Hubbard, Lake Tewakene, and Lake Fork. And you might recall Lake Palestine to the south there is in the process of being connected through our integrated pipeline project with Tarrant Regional Water District. So one of the big steps when you look at long-range planning is water demand projections. And slide 17 is a little primer about that. We basically take our lead from the Water Development Board for gallons per capita per day, as well as population and how that gets spread about in our service area. So the results of that on page 18 shows a significant savings or reduction in demand, and I attribute that to our water conservation efforts. So this chart shows, just to slow down just a minute, the blue line was our demand projection from the 2011 Regional Water Plan. The black line is the line we're planning on. It's about 150 million gallons a day difference. That, in essence, is about a lake and a half in terms of strategies that we would be recommending. This is a big piece of what goes into our overall plan. So the next slide on 19 shows you how we looked at what we have available. Again, we have a connected supply of about 550 million gallons a day. Over the course of a 70-year period, you expect some sedimentation loss. It's a little bit, not too much. And one of the things that we've added this year is a recognition of climate change or climate temperature increase. The research is a little bit, I can't think of the right word. Rainfall patterns are not really identified for climate change, but temperature is. So we know the temperature is rising. That has a direct impact on evaporation. So for the purposes of our planning, we've added that assumption of an increase to 7 degrees Fahrenheit by 2070. So it may not seem like a lot, but from a water supply standpoint, it's substantial. So on slide 20, you could see how that affects the overall supply. And, in fact, we would barely have enough supply. 460 is the number that was on the previous page out in the 2070 time frame. So slide 21 is a graphical representation of when we would begin to need additional water in the long term based on the drought of record. So simply put on slide 22 is a little bit of a graphical or a tabular chart of that. It's important, I think, to recognize what I call buffer supply. Some call it surplus. Either way, is an additional supply over what your actual demands might be. I think it's important to recognize the fact that it takes a long time and quite a bit of money to connect supplies, and so we think having a little bit of inventory is has historically served us well, and we propose to include that, and you'll see that in a little bit. Bottom line here is that based on the planning tools and the demands and water availability, by 2070, we would need an additional 258 million gallons a day to serve our customers. So that's kind of the context of it. So once you got that piece done, we looked at the various strategies that are available to us. On slide 24, you can see kind of a hierarchy, bless you, of the process that we go through to look at that. And by the way, we didn't do this by ourselves. You might recall we hired the firm of HDR to help us through this process. So on slide 25, we turned all the rocks over to see what strategies might be out there. So we started with over 300 strategies, culled them down to about 41, and then culled those down further to come up with our potential strategies today. I don't want to skip over the ranking process, but I think it was pretty robust as far as looking at the pieces that went into that. So I'm going to go on to slide 28 to get you to the preferred strategies that came from that process. There's lots of stuff, it's a technical term, in the appendix. It's really kind of the appendix represents almost the study itself. But these are the preferred strategies we came up with. And you'll see some usual suspects from our previous plan. And so I think there's the good news here is we've been on this path and we're still on the right path, I think, to getting additional water for us. So you can see the strategies there. Conservation is, of course, still at the top of the list. Indirect reuse of our wastewater is also there. The Palestine connection that I mentioned before. So as we move on and look at the next slide, we selected these as the recommended strategies for a couple of reasons. One, availability, balance in our system. We have to supply the eastern part of our system and the western part of our system, which I showed earlier. And then ultimately, the last piece of these supplies show up with run-of-the-river nature's water, which technically would be like a pump station and some really big pumps, and we would be able to move that water over to Palestine and then through our IPL line. We also include alternative strategies on slide 30 for the purposes of two reasons. One, we think it's important to not discard strategies. The water supply environment, you don't want to limit yourself too much because you never know when you might lose a project, like Lake Fafsel, for instance. And so these are alternative strategies that stay on our radar. And it'll also go in, we would recommend those would go in the regional water plan as well. Slide 31 is really what the system would look like in theory based on our recommended strategies that we've laid out here, or preferred strategies that we've laid out here for the council. So you can see the regional water line, the IPL project, the potential sites for the pump stations at Natchez, as well as the main stem balancing reservoir and reuse project. So in summary, our system savings or conservation improvements, and this is throughout our customer base. It's not just Dallas's. Our customer cities have also contributed to the savings from their efforts in conservation. So it's about 151 million gallons a day from the previous plan. Like I mentioned earlier, that's about a lake and a half. The projected supply deficit is what we talked about earlier, again, about roughly in 2027. And lastly, these recommended strategies would be identified to address that. So those were laid out on a previous chart. And I think the good news about this is that we have a lot of these things within our reach. They're pretty likely to occur. They are a lot of money. I think that you all know the regional pipeline is about a $900 million project. That over the course of time has to get built into our water rates for both our wholesale and retail. So lastly, next steps, we've scheduled on our time frame a council adoption of these potential or preferred strategies on October 8th, subsequent to comments and other discussions about that. So with that, Mayor and Ms. Ranger, I'll turn it back over to you and await questions.
Okay, thank you. We'll have a couple of comments. I just have one clarification. Page 18 before we start. So when was the blue line drawn and when was the black line drawn?
The blue line was drawn back in 2010.
Okay.
And it actually utilized forecasts from 2005. So to be clear, one of the things that drives this is census as well as changes in GPCD since 2005. Okay? So that line, the new line, is drawn as of the experiences we've had for the last 10 years.
That was the blue line.
That's the black line.
Black line. So the black line was drawn when? This summer?
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha. So with all the population that's taking place and all the growth our city's experiencing, you still predict it being down?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let's down slide 18. Essentially, the 05 projections that went into the 2011 water plan, 2011 is the last time we did the update on the long-range plan, right?
Right.
Okay. So the 05 projections were incredibly optimistic, right?
Or pessimistic, yeah.
I think population growth is optimistic, but, I mean, from your perspective, you got to supply water, so I guess that's what we're talking about.
The demand, if I might, Mr. Kingston, the demand, the gallons per capita, the water use per person drove that number more than population.
Yeah, tell that story because that's important.
So I think that our gallons per capita has dropped about 20% since those initial estimates. And, in fact, we used that last drought of record, or not drought of record, that last drought to drive that number. And so as the Water Development Board is looking at these plans, it's like, well, what are you experiencing? Our conservation has, you know, I don't know if we've hit a home run, but we've certainly hit a double. And so that's really driving these numbers down, not population, because you see it growing. And
on the residential side, how much more can we squeeze out of conservation? On a user per day per day?
No,
user gallons per day.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. We forecasted total conservation improvements as part of our strategy here. That's on, I think, slide 28 of about 47 million gallons a day. We think we can get some other improvements out of system improvements, whether it's pipelines, plant efficiencies, flushing programs, leak detection, those kinds of things. So I hate to say I could get another 5% or 10% out of residential. I think system-wide, we're looking at the 47.
Okay. As a general overlay to what I'm going to ask you about, I want us to be sure that we understand what we're talking about, regional versus Dallas needs and demands. I take it from this presentation and from the 2011 presentation that you're responding to what's essentially state law, which is that Dallas must play nice with the rest of Region C, right?
Well, yeah, I guess yes.
The population projections, for instance, are a regional population increase projection, not a city of Dallas population increase projection.
That's correct. The population projections included in here come from the state demographer. And those are reviewed on a city-by-city basis, and then how those then are aggregated into the Dallas system for water supply purposes.
And so the supply, even though historically the 1959 plan was not really a regional plan, it was a Dallas plan, and city of Dallas taxpayers paid for the original supply improvements, that water is owned by the state, right?
Well, the water is owned by the state. I might argue that more than just the citizens of Dallas paid for that water at that time.
Well, certainly the citizens of Frisco didn't pay for that water.
Well, that's true, but they're not they're not a regular customer of
ours. I'm just saying there are many our regional neighbors are putting much greater demands on the system than they possibly ever were expected to in 1959. Is that fair?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know that I can say that.
Now I'll say it.
Okay.
Okay. So what is our treated capacity per day right now?
About 900 million gallons a day.
Okay. So on even a pretty, even using the 05 projections, that gives us sufficient treated capacity per day, if we have sufficient supply, to keep us going through like 2060, right?
Right, and let me clarify, the treatment capacity is a peak day issue where, I lost my train of thought already, where the water supply is measured on the average day. So our treatment plants have to meet our peak day supply requirements, and those have come down as well.
Let's go to 14 if we could. Explain Fastrel replacement. You're just going to pump water right out of the Neches?
Sort of. Basically, that project would be, and I can actually go to the slide, but the map in the back, but that project would be to build a pump station and be a low water dam, kind of like you'd see a Fraser Dam or Carrollton Dam, and pump water out of the Neches into Lake Palestine or directly into the pipeline. You can see on the last slide that I presented the map.
Who's going to have to sign off on that plan?
Say again, sir?
Who's going to have to sign off on that plan?
Well, the city council, for one, and first. Secondarily, we would enter into an agreement, the council, if they chose to, with the Upper Neches to develop the project, subsequently make water rights applications to the state, and then so forth and so on.
And then the feds also?
The feds will always weigh in on anything that involves waters of the U.S., and is this would.
Is this above or below, upstream or downstream of the wildlife reserve?
It's downstream.
Okay.
On slide 31, which is the map, Mr. Kingston, you can see that where it says intake and pump station below Cherokee County. That'd be roughly where that would be.
Let's go to, I'm sorry, I didn't write down which slide you've got your evaporation increase estimate on for accounting for climate change.
You can see that in the table on slide 19 or the graph on slide 20.
I think it's really, I think you're being absolutely smart to think about how our supply is actually going to be affected by climate change. My question is where you're getting 2 degrees, 7 degrees. I've never seen the 7 degree number before.
That analysis came from the work of our consultants, Ken Schopel and Corey Shockley.
Is that in the appendix? I didn't leave.
No, that study is not in the appendix. It actually comes from some research done by a couple of guys I don't remember the names of, but we could provide you that analysis.
Yeah, give it to me, and maybe they're just being conservative, which I would applaud, so I think that's really important. I think you're being absolutely smart to do that. Okay, a couple of other issues you raised. On conservation, we're going to reach a limit at some point, I think, of the ability to squeeze conservation out of the residential side. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to bring back up commercial rates. And you and I have had this discussion that our rates have to reflect some rational basis for setting the rate there. And since I'm just going to try to summarize for speed. Commercial rates are lower than residential rates because, in general, commercial users create less peak demand, and peak demand creates greater costs on the system. Is that about right?
That's about right.
Okay. Two things on that. I think that we can make a rational argument that commercial users have a greater elasticity of demand than residential users, and I think we can prove it. Meaning that if we raised their rates, we would achieve a greater conservation effect than by raising residential rates. Also, I just hate raising rates on voters. The political stuff to the side for the moment, I think we can create a rational argument that there's a reason to set commercial rates higher. Second thing is, what are we doing to moderate peak demand other than just across-the-board conservation? Are we targeting anything at that? I think the two peaks are morning and evening, right?
Right. What we've done is target demand. Other than the time of day watering,
which has really made
a huge difference.
These are off the top of my head. The fact of those trips, we have peaked at $789 million a day. This year's peak demand was 530. And rainfall's also like this. One of the things, just to your point about commercial, there's two things that we're looking at in context of our strategic plan of conservation. Come back. One is industrial and commercial programs targeting that area. And I think understanding which commercial customers are elastic and which are inelastic is relevant. Example, apartment complexes are lumped in with 7-Elevens.
Good point.
And so 7-Elevens are inelastic where apartment complexes are not, depending on the water. So I think that that's an opportunity for us to look at how those sectors are.
Okay, has she been off the record the whole time?
No, just now. I was going to pour water, and then I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. Okay, so one idea I'd like us to take a look at is on-site treated supply storage. We can't really retroactively do this, but it might be a fairly cheap fix, especially for all the new multifamily that's going in. I suspect it would be fairly inexpensive to require some call it peak supplementation storage on site. It'd be a building code thing. I mean, I think it's actually not that hard. And then it would reduce, for instance, the impact of multifamily projects on peak demand. Anyway, that's a minor efficiency thing.
Yeah, I think we had an email exchange a little bit about that some time ago. So I'll put that on the...
I would appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Second thing is with regard to capacity, I hope that you're able to get water out of the Neches. I'm worried about that, given our litigation history with the feds over that wildlife refuge. And so I'm reminding you that I'm interested in, while we're looking at the upcoming dredging of our existing supply, that I'd like to examine the possibility of deepening our existing reservoirs. I've informally bounced this off every environmental group I can find, and nobody seems to have a problem with it. They all like it a lot better than building a new lake. So, and given the way the state has gone to restoration of original flows for rivers, I'm really worried about the security of supply when we're just going to take out of an existing river. Anyway, that also, to your point about evaporation, that should be a very direct way to address the evaporation issue. You have exactly the same surface area, but a greater volume. Last thing I wanted to mention to you is, as we're going forward, I would like to be kept apprised very carefully of what we're doing to address regional demand and what the costs are that are not being shared regionally. Maybe that's all being done exactly pro rata, everybody's pitching in. I have the sense that we're leading this charge and that some of our neighbors get the benefit of our effort in a lot of ways. And so just keep me apprised of how everybody is pitching in.
Okay.
I know that they all are going to want to do their part. let me just say that this is a really good briefing. I really appreciate the long-range vision that you brought to the long-range water supply plan. And let's just, if I'm asking a lot of questions, it's because it's really important. I think you know that. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do want to second. This is a good briefing. I just had a question on 28, the preferred strategies that you came up with. One, have you set time frames to those, or how are you gauging to, you know, meet that demand by 2070?
Yes. If you look at slide 29, mm-hmm. I know there's lots of numbers in here. So,
okay.
If you look at slide 29, where we propose to have these different strategies connected.
Okay.
You'll see there, for instance, I point out the IPO, the Lake Palestine connection with the Bachman plant. By 2030 is when we would propose to have that completed,
okay.
All things being equal with the drought record.
All right. And on those strategies, kind of a follow-up to that, is do you expect, and Mr. Kingston's question about the Natchez addresses this, but do you see anything else with these strategies that will be difficult to implement because you couldn't get approval or because you actually, I think you talked about a high cost related to the regional supply expense. I mean, that was, you know, is there anything in these strategies that you see like being derailed because of cost or because you can't get the approval or, you know?
Well,
I see you have backup strategies, too.
I guess the simple answer is, sure, there's always going to be bumps in the road. But, for instance, strategies B1 and B2 involve water rights we have already. We have permitted our wastewater reuse to be used for our purposes. However, this main stem balancing reservoir, for instance, is an off-channel reservoir where we can bank the water. So, for instance, there are times of year where the wastewater just goes on down the river, and I don't really need it, but I don't have any place to put it. And so if my lakes are full, I don't have any place to put it. So this allows us to do that. However, that project has to be permitted. Everything goes through the Corps. And so now they're not – I don't think they're deal killers, but there's still a permit process that takes time. And I guess I don't want to beat this too much, but these projects take time to get implemented from a permitting standpoint. The IPL connections involve pipeline projects that require 404 permitting from the Corps. That's typically not insurmountable. If there's an environmental issue, we have to address that, and we will, but we already have those water rights as well. So the fact that if you have a water right, that gives you a leg up. I'll use Columbia as an example here. That's also in the Angelina Natchez Basin. They have a water right for that lake, but we don't have an interbasin transfer for that water. So that is another step in that. So we think these are doable without, World War III. To get them done.
They all require some challenges, but they are, you thought those out when you made those the strategy.
Right, and that's how they will rank this way.
And then you have some backup strategies, I guess.
Correct.
And then can you just talk a little bit about direct reuse? So how that's going to be implemented.
Well,
I know we're doing some reuse, like on our golf courses, correct?
Yeah, we have a couple golf courses currently, that use actually water from our wastewater treatment plant, the central plant. And direct reuse involves, though, the construction of a separate pipeline system. And so cost per acre foot or cost per million gallons is a little higher. So where it makes good business sense for either the user or the utility, we'll look at that, and that's why it's on our list still. But we get the most bang for our buck by implementing indirect reuse. Now, I will say in the public, you might have heard about Wichita Falls program where they have the letters you might hear is DPR, which is direct potable reuse. So they are actually using a plant they've had in service, a reverse osmosis plant, to blend water from that plant, from their wastewater plant, into their water system. They're in bad shape from a water supply standpoint. It's met all the state requirements, and we've been operating about 60 days. So you'll not hear some of that conversation in the media.
So that's considered direct reuse? I mean,
that's direct potable reuse as opposed to direct reuse, which might be an irrigation project like at the golf courses or cooling tower water, things like that.
So we're not looking at doing, and that's not
direct
part
potable
of the
reuse.
The potable use
is not
the idea. Really, doesn't
is not on top. Is not at the top of our strategies now.
Okay, just and Mr. Kleinman just asked why we're on that. Then clarify the direct reuse and indirect reuse.
So direct reuse would be like an irrigation golf course project. Indirect reuse helps to supplement the supply in our lakes. So in essence, You'd refill your lake with the wastewater.
With wastewater.
Right. And so the idea of this main stem project would be Esmeralda, go back to the big map. So our wastewater plants discharge into the Trinity River, and that water flows on out of the county downstream. So I think it's 29. I don't remember. And so what this project would propose to do is divert water out of the channel, out of the river downstream, and hold it so we could either pipe it to the IPL or pump it up to Lakeford Hubbard. That's yet to be seen. So, Esmeralda, let me help you there. Slide 31. So you can see it down there where it says balancing reservoir and main stem pump station if you look at the map. Slide 31 on your screens, maybe. So that's roughly where we put, that's technically in Ellis County. So we'd have to acquire the land to your previous questions. But it's a way to bank that water without, you know, damming up a river, you know, building a huge lake in another, you know, five counties away or whatever. So this is actually through the help of our consulting firm, they've helped flush this, no pun intended, flush this option out, which is very exciting to us. It's very exciting to us.
Okay. All right. And my last question is, where are we on what percentage of just direct water loss are we experiencing now?
Oh, you know, I brought that with me.
I didn't see that in the presentation.
I didn't have it in the presentation, but as I mentioned to Mr. Kingston, that's going to be a bigger part of our
that would be the one conservation plan. Yeah, so. Are we about 8%? Is that?
Our current water loss, I think, is anywhere, what we call unaccounted for, is between 8 and 9%, which is down quite a bit. Keep in mind, we estimate what we lose for pipe breakages and things like that and some of our flushing programs. It's the water that we can't account for at all is what we're trying to get after as well. So it's two pieces.
Right, and that would help with conservation if we could. And some of it, do we identify, do you think people are taking this illegally? Is that where, I mean?
Well, is there water theft? Yes. Do we prosecute it when we find it? Yes, and we have.
Difficult
to find. And so how much is it? It's really hard for me to estimate, and frankly, it's kind of in that 8 or 9%
okay.
number. But these are all, I think our programs, I got to give council credit on, you know, the programs they've approved with our main replacement programs and our leak detection programs, condition assessments that have gotten us ahead of that water loss side, too.
Okay. So. All right. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Joy, how much money have we saved on conservation? I know for residents, they cannot water between the hours of, say, from 10 to 5 or 10 to 6, and you pick up at 6 o'clock and you can water. Have we saved a lot of money on the education of saving water?
Well, the educational component of our water conservation plan, through our partnership really with Tarrant Regional, we've saved money in regards to the media buys. And what I mean by that is that we schedule those buys not concurrently, but consistently, and we share the media creative. In other words, the Long Whisper program, water conservation program that you might see, is a shared effort by the two agencies. And so I don't remember that savings off the top of my head.
But we have saved some money.
Yes, based on that partnership, yes, ma'am.
Okay. Can you go back to page 31? On 31, Joy, is this the recommended plan that you're asking us to vote on, or this is just a briefing that you're giving to us about the change?
Based on today, mm-hmm. this would be our recommended plan we would ask you to vote on October 8th.
Okay, so this is for October the 8th.
And so, of course, we're here to visit about what our recommendation is see if there's other changes.
Away from this, I would like to meet with you on page 31. I have some other questions I want to ask.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Mr. Allen.
No,
agree. This is a regional situation. That question, and with your leadership, top leadership being involved there at the table, is huge for Dallas. But again, this is a regional situation when it comes to water. The slide 44. And I just want to kind of build on some of Councilwoman Gates' comments about the indirect reuse. And so I heard that this might be a little bit on the expensive side. So just kind of clarify, because as we've talked about in the past, what about not quite a third of the water that we clean comes back to us as wastewater, somewhere in that, about a third, somewhere close to that.
Give or take.
Yeah. And so that would equate to, somewhere probably in excess of 50 billion gallons of water. And so what efforts then are we doing? And that's just Dallas. No, let me back up. I assume that's the other 20-plus cities also, their wastewater that's coming back to us?
No, we don't. We don't get much wastewater from our wholesale customers. Most of their wastewater goes to the TRA Central plant that's on Interstate 30 near Singleton.
Is that the one, and then they take that to the Trinity River?
Correct. And they also have permitted their reuse as well. Mm-hmm. But the water specifically that we have permitted is from our Southside and Central Wastewater Treatment Plant.
And that's the 50-plus billion gallons a year?
Roughly, yes.
Do you have any idea about, say, Fort Worth, about how much do they, their wastewater, do they take it to the Trinity River also?
Yes, sir. All the communities in this region utilize the Trinity River and or its tributaries for their discharges. And so some years ago when the concept of reuse really began to percolate, those agencies, as well as us, went forward to get reuse permits for that water. And I think maybe Mr. Kingston mentioned this, it's the state's water. Well, once the water goes back into the river, it's the state's water. And so we permitted that water, as well as the other agencies, so we'd have that to develop supplies.
So that would be you have to have a permit. I guess that's where my question ultimately was going to go. The state, do they regulate what we have to do with our wastewater as far as, does it have to go back into the Trinity River to go down to Houston?
No. But, this is always a but. State does require certain, you might hear the phrase E-flows, environmental flows, in the river basins, Trinity River being one of them. Where a certain amount of water has to stay in the river for habitat and things like that along the river. And so we have a requirement in our permit to do that as well. So however, theory you could use, if you could directly reuse all of it, doesn't become state water, but then you're having an adverse effect on the environment by not having any flow. So.
That's of all the cities, Fort Worth. They're all the ones that flow in to this huge Trinity River Basin. Talk about stormwater. Is there state regulations in regards to what with stormwater as far as it flowing into the Trinity River Basin, into the Trinity River, our stormwater?
As far as the volume and who can get it?
Right.
Well,
I kind of view stormwater as the same as wastewater.
Well,
you use the word bank that water, and I'm kind of you know I'm big on
trying. Banker, right?
Yeah.
So once the water leaves the curb and gutter, goes into the storm sewer. Once it hits waters of the U.S., it's state water. And so, and frankly, that's what our water supplies are built on. The storm events run off, the water stays behind the dam, right? And so one of the interesting things about the component piece of the main stem pump station and reservoir is our ability to scalp stormwater when it comes by, so to augment that additionally. And so because of the water rights we already have upstream, maybe get too far in the weeds, but so I think that that gives us the ability to what we call scalp the stormwater, as long as it doesn't impact or impair anybody else's rights. So there's models that help us do that.
The in regards to stormwater, just so we kind of have a flavor for the amount we're looking at, you're able to tell us that we're doing $140 billion gallons that we treat every year, approximately 140 plus billion gallons. And again, not quite a third of that is treated that comes back to us, so another 50 plus billion gallons. That's a lot of water. On the stormwater side, have you ever, and have there been studies approximately about how many billions of gallons of stormwater there is that comes down?
Well, there is. The state uses water availability models, and it's all based on stream flow, gauge analysis, stream gauge, and USGS gauges on the rivers. So all of that is factored into water that's available for permitting from a water right standpoint. So I don't know how else to answer your question. Simple answer is yes, but that's done through the state's water availability model.
So it'd be hard to pinpoint our region about how many billions of gallons of water, of storm water that falls.
Well, I think you could calculate it, and I think that's embedded in the data that's in the water availability model. And then some of the other hydraulic and hydrological studies, when you have a 2-inch rainfall over an area, how much water does it produce?
And I'll end, Mayor, Jody, you're right up there at the top of my list as far as the confidence in knowing that our citizens in 1970 will have water because of your leadership and your planning. My hat's off to you. I'm just so proud of you. And then at the same time, I think at some point in time, too, we will continue to be on the cutting edge when it comes to the reuse of this water because, again, whether it's storm water or treated water, whatever, and the thought process of how we fill these lakes up with our with water that's already available to us, recognizing that we also have to flow water down to Houston for them to drink our water. One last time, since we're getting kind of close to my end of the time, how much, and I know you knew this was coming, so you had to prepare for it, how much is it per gallon cost when I put my hand on that tap and that gallon of water comes out in my tap water? About approximately how much does that cost me as a citizen?
I think it's somewhere.
Less than a penny?
Roughly. I thought our average rate was like $3.50 a thousand. That's what's in my head. And so $3.50 a thousand gallons is...
less than a penny a gallon?
Pretty cheap.
Yeah. And that's my point, council members, is when we talk about water rates and such, put your head around what we just talked about. And we do such a Jody and her staff and the city has done such a terrific job in giving water, and it's a challenge, and we haven't talked about clean. You've won award after award after award for clean water here at the City of Dallas, which is huge. And I could not stay awake at night worrying about when somebody put their hand on that tap, were they getting clean, safe water to drink. I couldn't do your job for that very reason. And you won awards for that. So, again, my hat's off to you, girl.
Okay.
All right, Mayor, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. And Jody, I really want to thank you for the informative presentation. You really do a great job, and I mean that. I think the City of Dallas is one of the best public water systems in the country, if not the world. And that's indicative of the awards, you know, that we've had. And we just appreciate what you do. Would you give a little bit more detail about the Lake Texoma desalinization? Where is that salt coming from, back washing from the Sabine or where?
Now, to the western part, I don't think we have, I think there may be a map in here. Let me just, back to the west in Oklahoma, where, I can't think of the small.
Is there a salt dome or something that's bleeding into the river?
I don't recall if there's a salt dome or just salt deposits that are along that section of the Red River. And most folks know that the Lake Texoma is a pretty saline, and in fact is blended with water, fresh water from the lakes. That's how North Texas Miss Water District does it. And so that is a future strategy or an alternate strategy just because of its price. And then the challenge with desalination, at least currently still, is what you do with the reject water once you remove the salt from it. And so I think that ultimately, as technologies keep getting better, there may be options for that in the future.
That could be pumped back into the groundwater at some point, much like fracking.
Some folks are looking at disposal wells for that, just like you hear disposal wells in the oil and gas industry.
Mm-hmm.
And even the oil and gas industry is looking at recycling water as well now, just because of the demands that go with that.
Is the state of Oklahoma going to share in that cost, and at what level?
The state of Oklahoma is not interested in Texas as it regards water currently. But, you know.
Imagine that.
It's the risk of having 32 years here. I'd say stuff I probably shouldn't say. But I think that there may be a future for that. But as far as am I going to bank our regional supply on get Oklahoma water, it's still a strategy, but it's not one. You know, if that comes to us, we might grab it. Just you have to be ready for that. But I think the North Texas Municipal Water District has the bulk of the Texoma water. Partnership there on a desal project might be something we're interested in the future, but currently Oklahoma has not been interested in selling Texas any water.
So. Gotcha. Councilman Kingston touched on, I've been interested in a while. Can any of our lakes or watersheds be increased in capacity, either digging a deeper basin or maybe expansion of the perimeter of the lake?
I think that
lakes
dredging, I'll give you just a couple thoughts on dredging. First of all, as a drought continues, and if this one continues, we might be back to visit with you about dredging as it relates to an intake. They silt in over time. And so some suppliers currently are having to deal with that issue. We are not as of yet. The other side of dredging is dredging in lieu of new supplies. And the Water Development Board has recently produced a study that looks at the cost comparisons of those. And, of course, the biggest challenge is, dredging's not rocket science, right? The biggest challenge is what do you do with what you've dredged?
Yeah.
So then you have to deal with the water quality issues. You have to deal with what to do with that material, where to put it.
Just make concrete out of it.
Well, there's that. I think when we dredged the White Rock Lake project, we actually used some old borrow pits. I might be wrong about this, but that's my memory. And that was really a smaller dredging project. So I think that, you know, there's no option that we won't look at, and dredging is still out there. From a cost perspective, it's not, it's certainly way not the cheapest, but it still has some pitfalls. Environmental Corps, it still has permitting pitfalls.
And it might be really more economical than going out and creating another lake or reservoir, which our East Texas friends are not going to be very happy with us, because they always say that, you know, we want to keep our green lawns greener as a result, and that's where we're invading their territory. So I'd like to build better partnerships and friendships and utilize or expand the capability of the lakes that we have. I like the idea that you talked about utilizing our tributaries and our estuaries, you know, to dam up maybe water that might otherwise be lost. I think that's a brilliant idea, rather than let it just simply go downstream. If there's a way that we can, I know river-wise we can't do that, but I think the tributaries and estuaries, creeks, you know, we can do that to some limited basis. So I think that's a brilliant idea. I also... No, that's something I've already mentioned. I guess lastly, I would just say, you know, obviously we've got to do everything that we can to protect and enable delivery of our water supply. And if we don't, then, you know, obviously we can't afford or we can't expect our economic expansion to continue the way that we've expected it to do. That's going to limit growth and opportunity here in this area. It's so critical to be able to deliver water. I think those communities that don't deliver water, they're going to cease to really grow. And Dallas has always been really forward-thinking, you know, in terms of our long-range water planning, and I just think that we're going to have to continue to do that if we know what's good for us. And I hope that our friends to the west in Fort Worth will also share that concept, because we can't grow as a region if we don't have water. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Joe, for that very good and informative report. I think all council members recognize that you're really a state leader, thought leader in this area, and that we're very, very fortunate to have you running our water department. Our citizens... maybe the best, good and bad, the best thing is they take it for granted that when they turn on the tap, good, clean water comes out. And there's a lot that goes into that, including, you know, $600 million a year of our budget. So that's great work. I'm particularly interested in the indirect reuse. Thank you for explaining that. Certainly more palatable than the direct reuse where we're a closed-loop system. Although if we get to that at some point, maybe we'll get there. But it sounds like, it looks from your estimates, we're looking at north of 150 million gallons a day that we can recover through indirect reuse, and that sounds like a great opportunity. So let's continue to pursue that. But overall, this is one of the kind of silent things that the city does and does well, and affects everybody every day. So thanks for your hard work, and thank you for this update. And just keep us updated as to this and other projects that are going on.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Jody, on the map on 31, what's the reality of this map looking like that in 2070? I mean, are there things there that might happen that we won't have these reservoirs, and how do you go about getting these reservoirs?
I think that the reality of everything on here but for the yellow lines at the bottom are
real.
I mean, I think it's all real, but as far as what the uphill battles are, the uphill battles are, you know, Lake Columbia is a new lake. And even though they have a water right permit, they don't have a permit from the Corps to build that. And so, and we would suggest, if that's the way we end up going after October 8th, that we would enter into an agreement with that river authority to investigate building that project in the future. It takes 30 years to build a project.
Yeah.
The nature's run of the river also has to have a water right permit. Same kind of idea with that. The other projects really are just needing to be implemented, for lack of a better term. They still go through their core permitting. You know, we'll have an occasional eminent domain issue on a pipeline. We've got a couple of those out in Henderson County right now, where people, gosh, they don't want a pipe across their property. I'm not making light of that, but I get that. But still, it's the path here. So I like our chances for that, quite frankly, even though I won't be here in 2070. I think it's, you know, Mr. Allen mentioned about what we do. Well, I just think what this council has done over the last 60, 70 years is paramount in making these maps turn out to that. I don't do that by myself.
Okay, but these are all existing lakes, correct?
The two, all but the Lake Columbia.
Yeah.
That's in that kind of lime green color.
So we just have to go through the process of getting that water.
Right. And, for instance, both Lake Columbia and the Neches Project involve interbasin transfer rights that don't exist yet.
Okay.
Okay.
And then if we get this map, will that give us our future consumption 50 years from now? Are we going to still need more water to supply our...
Well, I guess I'd answer it this way. I would never have thought that we'd be so successful on conservation when I first came here in 82.
Yeah.
Our business model was to sell water. And so we're in the service provision now. And so as technologies keep changing, plumbing fixtures change, climate may change a lot of that as well. So I think the part of long-range planning is it's a constant view of where you are in the next five years.
Yeah.
So I think this is just the add-on to the legacy that got us to this point, I guess is the best way I can explain it.
Yeah, that's what I hope that does happen. And I want to thank you for all the work you've done, and our water department done a great job. It's a great report. Thank you, Jody.
I'm not going anywhere, so
please don't go anywhere.
At least not today.
I'm surely not trying to get rid of you.
I thought, is something I don't know? thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor, and Joey. Let me just say and thank Mr. Cadane, because that's exactly where I was going. And not to have any concerns or questions as relate to the water, for you to sit there as a director and to be able to address all of the concerns that are not even a part of this presentation only shows the knowledge that you have and the work that you bring to Dallas Water. And I just want to personally commend you for being able to be on top of the issues as you've been, and to be able to guide us through our water vision plans and into the future. Now, I know that Esmeralda has helped you a lot, because you got her from my office, so I know that she's extremely helpful. And Forrest has been one that's been with you all the way. But I want to also pass those accolades over to AC, because you have a director here that I'm only commenting now to just give accolades to. And it gives bounce back accolades to you for keeping the best in place in some of the most critical areas that affect us in our city every single day. So I just want to give you those accolades and comments, and know you're not going anywhere. AC, do not let her go anywhere. And let's continue to move the water program in Dallas forward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson.
2 minutes. You're done.
She's coming. We're coming up. The on-air sign was not on. But we have to start over.
I just have two quick questions. On page 41, I was surprised to see the demand is half, it's almost equally half City of Dallas and half Customer Cities. That I didn't realize. And so my question goes to page 32, which is the savings that we have been able to achieve through conservation. And how much of that do you know? Are you able to quantify how much of that savings is attributable to City of Dallas and how much is attributable to our customer cities?
Yeah, you know, we looked at the different customer city pieces. We have the numbers but it's, I won't say it's about half, but, you know, the office joke was even Addison has lowered their gallons per capita, from like 400 to 350. And so even though some of the communities don't have, for instance, twice weekly watering as a conservation method, they get the impact of our campaigns. They also pay for it, by the way, in their rates. And so I don't remember the exact percentage, but it's, you know, it's not quite half.
So even though the demand is about half, so is the conservation reduction is can be attributed 50-50?
It's probably more like 40-60, just because, at least currently, because of the demands in place. So they've made strides.
That's better than I thought.
They've made strides. I have a when we looked at the demands in specific, when we were putting the pieces together, their gallons per capita have dropped off as well. And so sometimes whether they like it or not, because their citizens are in the same media market that ours are, and they also believe in it too. Sometimes it takes them a little bit because it impacts your revenue.
Okay, and my other question is on page 43. What does that last bullet point mean, increased utilization of mobile technologies aimed at impacting consumer behavior?
What that has to do with is the potential of automated meter reading and their being able to see their demands, for instance, on phones and things like that. We currently have just a little bit of automated meter reading in our retail system, but you can't see, like if you have a digital electric meter, you can go on to smarttexas.org, I think, and see how much you used yesterday. So we don't have that capability yet for our wholesale retail customers yet. We're looking at a program potentially to bring forward you all to look at that. But that's really kind of what that means.
Okay, because that wasn't really clear.
Sorry.
On a smart meter, they can control the electricity that comes into your house as well as reading what electricity usage you're currently doing. Would you do the same thing if you did those kinds of meters? Would you be able to control the water that's coming in?
There's a technology that allows for that. It's not something that I would propose to do. I think that having an electronic solenoid to cut your water off without knowing what's going on in your property, I don't really think that's a good idea.
Good.
And so that's... I wouldn't want that for my service, and I wouldn't want that for our customers.
Okay, good. I think I like that answer.
Okay.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you. I just have two questions, and you probably don't have the answers for them, but I love simple metrics, okay? I like Mr. Allen's question about how much does a gallon kind of cost us, stuff like that. Is there a ranking in Texas or the United States about citizen consumption by citizen of water?
A ranking.
Okay. It comes back to Mr. Kingston's question. You know, he didn't quite get all the way there, but the consumption by citizen is what now?
It's the average gallons per capita is about 190 in Dallas.
190
gallons per capita.
Per year.
Per day.
Per day.
So that if I take all the water I sell to my retail customers.
Got it.
Okay.
190. Okay. Yeah, and it's is it just retail or is that commercial in there as well?
Well, so let me. Retail is all of Dallas, not just residential. It includes TI.
Great.
And
okay.
7-11.
So 190 gallons per day. Okay. We are I think happy of what we've accomplished in the last 4 or 5 years. You changed that line in a big way, and you said it was consumption that was primarily driving that down. And we're going to try to do better, but there may not be as much, you know, water there as we would want. where does 190 per citizen compare to other big cities like us? Maybe that's the question I'm asking.
Well, we would argue you don't compare one city to the other.
Why not? Everybody's got commercial and everybody's
because they're
got,
not all the same. You asked me.
No one ever wants to write anything next to anybody because everything, you know, everything's always different. But just looking at it, where would we stand?
Well, I think that, well, we are higher than some and lower than others.
Wow.
Gallons per capita per day is a measure that's used for planning purposes. The state has a goal of 140.
So average city throughout the state, they want to be at 140.
That's their goal.
Okay.
And so if you want to measure us against that standard, we've gone from, you know, 220, 250 to 190, so we're on that glide path.
Okay.
You know, one of the big differences in this city is we import jobs. As water suppliers, we resist strongly that kind of comparison. So
as mayors, I love those comparisons. Okay? I understand why you do that, but you have to get a sense of someplace where you're in the universe. Is there one that you are resisting?
Well, I think that...
I mean, top 100 cities, and they're... I mean, we look at that from a crime standpoint, and Chief Brown tells me everything's different in every city. But we've got
one of the things we do measure is residential.
Okay.
So our residential number, golly geez, I'm going to say it's about 90 gallons per capita.
Okay.
And so that compares at least as well, or maybe, well, before this drought, it might not be, because San Antonio's cut their water use back. But that compares favorably with other southwestern cities in the state.
Just make sure I get a yes or no. Is there a ranking in some organization across cities that gets published every couple of years or something?
They're numbers that get published.
That's fine. So there's
The Water Development Board publishes numbers.
Okay.
And that people use to compare.
Okay. Great. So if we can see that at some point,
okay.
I mean, we've got to have wisdom. Look, numbers don't, you know, those things don't tell the whole story, but it'd be interesting to see where folks are and as we deal with this issue.
Right. I think the most important thing about those numbers is the change in them.
Of course. That's most important about all numbers.
That's the metric that I think serves
education. Everybody says you can't rank, you know, education, but, you know, rate of change is
I understand. Yeah.
In the past that you also have to be careful about in measuring what it causes. Some of the things that in terms of that lower ranking that we would be getting on a measure is also about in the case of a lot of the water consumption has to do with the business or industry that we might be looking to attract.
I got all those things.
Okay.
I just want this, numbers don't kill people, people kill people. That whole thing about guns, it's what we do with the numbers, but we got to start with the numbers.
Sure.
Okay, so if we can get that and just kind of start to understand the dynamics of those, I think it's a healthy conversation to have.
To Mr. Kingston's point, the residential comparisons are pretty good.
Good. Well, let's look at the residential. I'm with the Mayor Nutter in Philadelphia, I want to say, man, we are doing a lot better residential than you are, Mayor Nutter. Okay, and same with Frisco, and same with other folks. Go ahead. What were you going to say, something?
I'm just going to guess, Mr. Mayor, that you're going to actually hate that comparison because I suspect that Mayor Nutter doesn't have to feed nearly as much St. Augustine as you do.
Maybe so, and we'll understand that. But that's. I want to see rate of change. I'll beat him on rate of change or something, whatever it is.
Okay. Got it.
The second question is much more complex.
Okay. Oh, good.
We have got a huge pipe issue in this city, right?
Yes.
Old pipes that are breaking and leaking, correct?
Yes, sir.
And we're losing a lot of water because of those old pipes, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Have we taken the cost of the water that is leaking against the cost of repairing the pipes so we can see where that line crosses at some point in the future? And say if we had all the money in the world and we spent it for the next 2 years and fixed every one of our pipes, it would pay out in 20 years or 30 years or whatever the time frame is.
I have to answer the question with some context.
Please.
We started on this, our robust main replacement program, gosh, about 04, maybe 05. And so we've been spending, gosh, anywhere from $80 to $100 million a year, and part of the rate increases have been associated with that, to replace old water mains. We'll always have breaks. We'll always have leaks. But the rate of replacement started back almost 10 years ago. So we think some of what we're seeing, it's hard to give you a metric for it, some of what we're seeing in the demand improvements or reductions is some of that. And so part of what our conservation plan will do is help, you know, measure. We've been replacing about 1% of our system a year. So 1% to 1.5% is, should we go more, should we go less, and spend that money on something else?
That's my question, okay? So that line goes from that blue to black line, and you just said we've saved about 1.5 lakes. I got that. That's a lot of money. As we look forward in the next 5 years, the rate of pipe construction that needs to be done, is it smart to get that done sooner versus later? And you know what? Since it's such a complicated question, I'm not asking for a answer at this point. I think that is the question this body needs to wrestle with. And if you've got numbers at some point to help us understand that payout analysis for that, that would be very helpful.
Okay. I think, too, understanding what the process is to get us to replacing those and then how much construction you can tolerate.
Yeah, but that's a practical question.
Right, but I think
I'm asking a theoretical question.
All right.
Okay?
I get it.
And that's where we asked a similar question some time ago.
Thank you. We did ask that question some time ago, and what it got caught up in is, as it is right now, the rates that we have that are increasing at about a 4 to 5% increase every year has with it an overall capital spend that is being in part to system improvements, but also in part to those longer-term projects to get us water. And so we looked at it as a balance of what that program represents against about 4% increase and kind of left it at that point. You're absolutely right. We could take the theoretical look and see, well, if we're going to go and either shift that balance or to have an additional amount of increase that would be associated with just line stoppage, and then what the trade-off is, you know, we can look at that.
Now, I think it's a pretty simple piece of algebra with different assumptions in that equation, and if we can just see that, that would be helpful for us to understand maybe why you get the trade-off and why you're doing what you're doing.
Right.
I'm sorry, Mr. Allen wanted to say something.
Just real quick, and Jody, as we do the measuring, what I would really like for you to zero in on, because when you talked in terms of residential, I think you're talking in terms of single-family homes, correct?
Generally, yeah.
So there's 450,000 households in Dallas. Half of them, and this goes back to the Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, that type, but half of them are multifamily. So what you just compared was single family with lawns and all this other swimming pools and all this other stuff. But we didn't compare half of our households that are using probably less water
because they do not have lawns and such. So it's real important that you point that out to us, because when you do your 190 gallons, well, 190 gallons times 365 times 1.3 million is 90 billion.
Yeah,
but you see where I'm going?
Yeah, no, of course.
So it's really important that you make sure that we know that.
Yeah,
because when you say that, you're ruling out half of our city households.
Yeah. We can measure that. I mean, we can segregate that by class.
And so the measurement and the clarifications are huge as you educate us.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, exactly. That education is the key word here. I just seeing those numbers and understanding them, I think, is important. All right, we're closing, but I want to just say to you, if hopefully you got a sense that this council respects you highly for what you're doing, okay? Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez, and thank you, Jody, and your whole team. This is not just, I know you would say it's not just you, but you are the leader, and you set a standard that is an important standard here at Dallas City Hall. And thank you for having high standards. So great work.
Thank you.
With that, we are going to now break into executive session. Okay, and we're going to go downstairs for the lunches, and then we're going to power through executive session. Then we'll come back here and finalize it. Hopefully, we can get all this done in about an hour and a half. Yes, ma'am. Yes, please go ahead. Yes. And have executive session.
Well, I was going to wait. I thought we were going to do it all in here, but we have an important birthday
to
celebrate this week. And my assistant's not up here, so if somebody could help me carry it in. Judge Hill is celebrating a birthday. We won't give her a number, but okay.
No. On September 23rd, I will be 66 years old. Give God the glory.
All right, and Mr. Cadan, could you lead us, because I'm not a singer.
Yeah. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, President. Happy birthday to you.
Congratulations, Judge. I never know what pitch we are starting on to this song. Okay. Ms. Alonzo has one quick announcement.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I did want to share with you all and let you know that we're having a press conference at noon downstairs so that we can talk about how important we need to get the flu shot so we can continue serving our constituency. So if you get a chance, please join us. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Medrano, and everyone else that already took it or got it. And if you haven't, please join us downstairs. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'll see you guys down there in just a couple of minutes. It is 11:51, September 17, 2014, the Dallas City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, receive advice from and consult with the city attorney on the following matters described in today's agenda. Kelvin Walker v. Amy Wilburn, legal issues regarding Chapter 9C, carry-out bags of the Dallas City Code, Union Pacific Railroad Company v. the City of Dallas, Texas et al., City of Dallas v. Fernando Martinez et al., and under Section 551074 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, to deliberate appointment to the Permit and License Appeal Board of Julio Suarez Macias. Thank you. Okay. It is 1:15 p.m. Excuse me, Mr. Atkins. Excuse me, Mr. Atkins. 1:15 p.m., September 17th. The City Council will now go back into session. We met under closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act. Received advice on Kelvin Walker v. Amy Wilburn, legal issues regarding Chapter 9C, carry-out bags at the Dallas City Code, Union Pacific Railroad Company v. City of Dallas et al., City of Dallas v. Fernando Martinez et al., and under Section 551074 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, deliberated appointment to the Permit and License Appeal Board of Julio Suarez Macias. We'll go back in and take item number two, I believe, is the item boards and commission. Ms. Rios.
Again, item two is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. You have for individual consideration Shelkeem Kelmeedy, and he is nominated to the Community Development Commission by Councilmember Cadane. To the Permit License Appeal Board, Julia Suarez Macias is nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Alonso. For council appointment, you have to the Reinvestment Zone 14 Board Skillman Corridor, Robert A. Juan is nominated by Councilmember Allen and meets the Dallas County resident qualification. To the Reinvestment Zone 18 Board Maple Mockingbird, Seguin Tyler is nominated by Councilmember Medrano and also meets the Dallas County resident qualification.
Second. We got a motion and a second to approve. Any questions? Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you very much. Ms. Rios, any other votes we have to?
No, that was it, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. The next item, the last item, is the city manager update. Let me just kind of briefly give us an overview of what I said in my my memo after speaking to Mr. Gonzalez. We kind of came to the conclusion that we do things kind of in piecemeal around here on different items, and we don't let Mr. Gonzalez just talk to us about kind of his vision of what's happening. This is a complicated issue, obviously, how the evolution and changes that he's making. But so to kind of have one big day and we talk about it is probably the wrong thing to do, but to take it in pieces and parts as we move forward. So we're going to take every briefing meeting 15 minutes out at the end of it, and he gets to kind of update us on all the not all, a certain item that he's working on, and then we can help coach offline and maybe bring up at a discussion for us as a council if we want to some item that he might talk about. So I want to make sure we have our input, but the purpose of this really is to let him communicate to us what he's doing. And as Ms. Alonzo always says, it's about communication. That's what she says, and so that's what we're attempting to do here. So we'll see how it goes, and we'll get feedback as we do it. So we are all ears, Mr. Gonzalez, and we'll I'll hold you to 15 minutes, okay?
Very good. Thank you, Mayor. As the mayor said during our discussions over the last few months, there's been a lot of conversation about changes made in the to be made in the organization, and I want to harken back a little bit to during the interview process a metaphor that I used in trying to describe some of the things that I would be working on. And I used the metaphor of an ocean liner in terms of a big, powerful ship moving through the ocean that is very powerful, can make a lot of things happen, leaves a big wake in its path. But even the best designed ocean liner will, below its surface, start forming barnacles. Those barnacles are just, again, a metaphor to be compared to is inefficiencies that can start developing over time as different decisions are made in the normal process of operating. And today I want to make sure that and restate that just as I said at the beginning, there's opportunities in our organization to do that maintenance work of making our operation more efficient, changing the culture of our operation in a way that would be more in line with what I believe the council wants to do in terms of taking us to the next level. And so to that end, what I am, as the mayor talked about, am going to be doing today is just listing the types of various initiatives that we have underway, some of which you have been briefed about in some of the committee meetings, some that you may not be aware of at all. But to make sure that it is on the record, if you will, that we are moving forward on a number of these different programs. Now, I have grouped them into three areas, that culture, systems, and people. The first I want to talk about that overall, what I'm looking to achieve are the things that are listed here as far as the overall changes, is that we would be more in a can-do spirit, in a more positive, entrepreneurial, creative way, making things happen. That we really hone in on the sense of urgency, but at the very same time, transparency. And then also increase our lines of communication, which this is, as an example, something that hopes to accomplish. Now, I've mentioned those are the groupings that I'm going to be talking about. And once again, just going to be today going as a list. We have a program that we are still developing, but have already started in a number of speeches and training with some of our staff, talked about a next level of how we're dealing with our customers, the three R's of as we're describing them, not reading, writing, and arithmetic, but being respectful, responsive, and resourceful. And each one of those means has an impact in terms of how we would be engaging our customers. Our health and wellness part of our program is something that in the past, I've already, and during this budget process, have talked a lot about what the opportunity is for our staff to get more healthy and what the consequences have already been and will be in the future if we don't become more healthy. There's a number of implications for that with our staff and with their families. In the next area, as far as our employee engagement, we have already begun quite a bit of a process to engage our employees in advisory group councils. We have about 7-8 departments that have already been organized. We are intending to organize the entire organization with these councils. This later on in the fall, you're going to be seeing a employee picnic, if you will, that is being done completely by them at their initiative, which is going to be focused on having their families go out and enjoy themselves in a spirit of just having fellowship among their employees. So far as I know, this is about the first time that employees on their own initiative, using their own efforts, have actually worked to make that happen. In terms of the having the formula of making things happen in an urgent way, there has been a number of efforts that we have in terms of just communicating with our staff that it is important to make sure that if anything can be communicated that we are interested in a topic, it's about that we're interested in doing it as quickly as we can. And if we can't do it very quick, at least let people know that that is the situation that is going on or not going on. That involves transparency and communication with the individuals that are involved, but also to start looking how we might communicate that in a number of different forums, such as those that are listed on the sheet. We're wanting to have our people be held more accountable, but it has to be done in the right way. And to that end, supervisor training is something that we have included in the budget. We're going to be using our existing staff to help mentor others that are not as skilled in the supervisory area. Some of those that should be more skilled that need to be enhanced in their level of performances as far as accountability need to be getting those refresher courses. In terms of our the area of systems, and there's several here, but first the ones that are the kinds of systems that will impact across the organization, we've been looking at our hiring process. We had engaged a consultant who has been working with civil service and our HR to understand where is it that we can be making changes that would enhance our recruitment capabilities, the speed in which we hire folks, and also process individuals in a way that we can be more assured that we're getting best talent and those that would have a good solid background that would not cause us problems in the future. Changes are already being implemented, but there's a lot more that's needed to be done in that area as well. Procurement, in a similar way, having a consultant that's going to be helping to identify opportunities there. In a similar, also workflow analysis, we have an efficiency team that has already been working on making improvements. This last budget, we had about $3 million worth of savings. We will be looking to keep up that and even greater levels of accomplishment with that group. Infrastructure analysis, I think you've been hearing a lot about that already. Now it's to see what we can do about addressing it in a fiscally responsible way. The management systems integration is way somewhat inside baseball, but it is about the fact that we have been investing a great amount of dollars into doing ISO, what they call ISO training, that is getting documentation of the processes that we have. We also had several areas involved in another type of style of management system called Six Sigma. The challenge here is to see how, where that is occurring in different parts of the organization, it can be pulled together under a framework and umbrella, which we think the Baldrige approach would be most useful in that endeavor. There's a number of folks that we're going to already be engaging from the outside to help us with this pursuit, and Mark McDaniel is going to be taking a lead role in making that happen. The next, in the next area, as far as budget and finance, we talked about today, about 20% of our effort is going to be looking at getting, as I termed, deep dives, looking at what a sunset type of approach that is basically to look at a department in a, with the assumption that maybe that department is no longer needed. And find out then why is it that they're doing whatever it is that they're doing. Does it make sense? Is there something we could be doing better in order to achieve the sorts of performances that we would expect in that area? Medical plan changes. You're going to be signing off, I hope, on some review from a consultant that will be looking at delivering our medical services under our medical plan in a very different way, one that, quite frankly, is going to be a little scary in terms of what impact that would have in the community as well as with our employees. In terms of improving in some of the more specific areas, in the area of building inspections, there a number of things have already been underway. I basically have asked Ryan to have that department levitate. I want to just make sure that we're doing absolutely everything we can do to make sure without any lessening in protection of the environment or of our neighborhoods that we do move development through the system as quickly as possible. The Trinity system, and I mean that the Trinity River and all that is involved there, we've been working hard over the last number of months to see that all of our city organization understand who has what ball with regards to the Trinity. And a lot of that has been very helpful in understanding where there are gaps in terms of supervision and responsibility, and to get those straightened out. That work will continue, and we'll hear more about it later. In the area of animal services, again, I know everybody's aware of those challenges, and Chris Swekert has his handful to just make sure that we are moving to achieve the appropriate balance in that area. Police civilianization and the EMS service delivery model are, again, some changing of paradigms that we have that we're currently underway in making possible. Now, in terms of reorganization, we are looking at there was a number of departments that were changed, or in the case of the first one, planning and neighborhood vitality created, which I believe is actually going to be addressing a number of different fundamental issues in the community by approaching them in a much more holistic way that focuses on geography as opposed to a siloed approach on function. And we will be hearing more about that as well. There's going to be a relook, or a continued look, I should say, on our compensation for our employees as it relates to various ways that we can make sure that we're keeping the talent that we're needing to keep in the organization and incent the kinds of behaviors that we're wanting to incent. As the economy is improving, we're seeing that people are more inclined, those that are most capable, oftentimes, to be leaving the organization. The briefing format that will be used is as follows: basic description, who's in charge, major milestones, new steps, and next briefing. That would be a format as we go into future briefings on one or two items that we'll deal in more detail. With that, I know that those are a number of different topics that might spur some curiosity on your part as far as what that might mean in the organization and how it's carried out, and I welcome those questions after the meeting.
Thank you very much. This is robust. We've got a lot of work to do, and please get with AC, and he'll prioritize how he kind of rolls this out as we go forward. With that, we'll take our afternoon speakers. Ms. Rios. I'm sorry. Ms. Alonzo asked for a brief copy. Was that not posted? Ah, thank you. So will you make sure that is sent out to the whole city council? Apparently it wasn't posted.
Yes, you can begin.
Okay. Got it. God, I didn't realize that. Thank you. Okay, Ms. Rios.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have two individuals signed up this afternoon, Yvette Velaze and LaCoya London. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, slanderous remarks will be removed from the room from the session of the City Council. You're allowed 2 minutes to speak. The amount is a timer. Please stay to the time. State your name and address for the record as well as address your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Thank you. We have Yvette Velaze.
All right. Hi, my name is Yvette Velaze, and quickly I'm just going to discuss the cite and release law. Monday at the Criminal Justice Advisory Board meeting, Adam Medrano, you were there, and he was witness to them saying that within the next 60 days, cite and release will be enforced here as a pilot program here in the city of Dallas. Less than 2 ounces will be a ticketable offense, just as the law states in House Bill 2391. So when that comes your way, I suggest that you kind of support it and take the advice of your Criminal Justice Advisory Board, because they know what they're talking about, and it was lovely meeting with them and being received with an intelligent look on legalization of medical cannabis in Texas. I want to mention one more thing real quick. The cite and release law, of course, is going to have a few people that oppose it. Like on last Thursday at the City Hall meeting that District Attorney Craig Watkins had at his church, some of his church members did not agree with my topic. They called me morally incorrect. And I was actually assaulted by a church member that was allowed by their pastor to orchestrate and be kind of security for this meeting. I would like for you guys to kind of look at that and these meetings at these churches. There's nothing wrong with having a meeting at a church, but when you have church members being allowed to orchestrate this meeting, when you have them being the ones that have the microphones and choosing who gets to talk and how long they talk for, putting hands on individuals that aren't church members, I stood up and, of course, you know, I'm pretty vocal, and when I spoke, I let it be known that I would like for that person to have assault charges filed. In a room full of officers, nobody took assault charges on this person. Actually, Chief Tony Robinson, there's videotape of him outside refusing to take the assault charges. And I'm here today to ask, how can I get these assault charges filed? This is the DA's church. This is his pastor. And I want to make sure that this is on public record and it's done correctly. And maybe if they didn't allow his church members to participate like they did in this town hall meeting, there wouldn't be an issue with church and state at all. So that's pretty much it. It's a big deal when I'm going against those types of people, Friendship West Baptist Church, plus, and that's the DA's pastor and his church member that assaulted me. So Christina Smith, if you don't mind, maybe after this, could you please help take this assault report?
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Your final speaker is Ifeok Ekong.
Okay, let's go.
Ms. Ifeok, your time is running.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Ifeok Augusta Ekong, and my clan is the White Rock, and I live, my zip code is 7241. I'm speaking about the psychiatric. I am a psychiatric patient. I became autistic, then I became schizophrenia, then I became bipolar, then I became Alzheimer's. The psychiatric, according to National Geography, Jerusalem 1, and when you go to National Geography, Jerusalem 1, the meaning of psychiatric is the vision. We see the vision in order to interpret the land, the sea, and the moon, and the star, and the ocean. And we went all the way from Uyo to Calabar, to Scotland, to Panama, and then we stationed in Galveston. Then we moved to the north, then we say the south, and then we say the west, and we say the east, and the cardinal point. And then we go to Huntsville, and we count ourselves, and we say Sam Houston. And then we go to Buffalo, and we count ourselves. And then we go to Garland, and we say the Eastern Star Seal, and we started interpreting. I know my minute will soon finish, and then we became the North Star. North Star is the trust. Our money is not in the bank. Our money is in the palm tree. Our money is in the coconut tree. Our money is in the crayfish, and it is by laws of law in Scotland, and then our money is in First Bank of Uyo, Cross River State, Nigeria, and then our money is entrusted in Panama Canal. Then I was raped in Whole Foods store, the one on Gaston and Abraham. I reported to the mayor and my social worker, and they did not do anything. And also downstairs, I was also raped downstairs, and right now I need help. I am in crisis. I want Scotland not to vote. We cannot vote because the creation will not be confirmed. So Scotland don't vote. All the descendants of Scotland, the bloodline, don't vote. Thank you.
That concludes your speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We'd love to get some, she said she needed some psychological help, so somebody's going to come meet you so we don't make sure we leave you out with a safe net. Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned at 1:39.